Hey, hey. All right. It's Joel Radio. It's Joel Fragamenti at the controls here. That's right. I'm running the board. Kind of badly, actually, so far. They haven't heard any of that, but you've heard it all. Joel Radio. Corey Hall's back. Hey, Corey.
Hey.
It's Corey Hall, everybody.
Surprise. There you go.
Here he is.
We heard the we heard the calls from a good six or seven of you.
Three people were outraged that you hadn't been on the show. So Corey Hall's back. How are you doing, Corey?
All right. I'm enjoying the... I think tomorrow will be okay. It was like one of the last really nice warm days of winter.
Yeah, I think we've got one more day maybe here, and then it's going to snow Saturday. That's what they're saying here in Detroit, Michigan.
Just Wonderful in time place. For my appearance with Dave Attell.
Oh, he's plugging right away. Look
right
at that.
The plug.
Plugging right away, Corey Hall.
I mean,
tell everybody about Dave Attell.
There can't be many tickets left at this point, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
Dave Attell, one of the finest comedians in this beautiful United States of America, or anywhere, frankly. I don't think Austria's got a funnier comedian. I don't think Swaziland has a funnier comedian or Zimbabwe. We know that South Africa's comedian is kind of lame.
Who was that?
Trevor Noah.
Oh, Trevor Noah. Yeah, that guy.
Dave Attell is one of the best comics ever and a great guy. I got a chance to open for him before.
Yeah.
So I'm psyched to be called again. Called to service.
Yeah, you and Dave. I think it's just you and Dave. I could be wrong on that, but
okay.
I think it's you and Dave. And it's this Thursday to Saturday. That's November 19, 20, and 21 at the Comedy Castle.
All right.
In Royal Oak, Michigan. Go to comedycastle.com. Check out the tickets.
Yeah.
So Corey's going to be there. Go see
Dave's
it.
Got a DVD, Roadwork, that's out.
Okay.
Is that right? Is that
I don't know. I haven't seen it, but... I'm sure it's good.
Yeah.
I see Dave so much live that I never really watch him
right,
doing stand-up
right,
on TV.
Because he comes every year, but he's a great guy.
Yeah, so go see Dave and Corey. It's a great show.
One of the funniest comics ever.
If you're hearing this, you only have a very short time to act.
Right.
You may have even missed this if you haven't listened
Perhaps
to this right
missed
away.
The window.
But,
yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, no, it's great. It is great. I want to plug it because...
Yeah.
Like, there's nobody I like more. In
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's maybe two or three other names of guys I'd be real excited to work with, but Dave Attell's at the top of the list. So.
No, he's one of the top guys. And
that's a comic I love to watch when I'm working with him.
Oh, yeah, that makes a difference,
Because, like, you know, a lot of times you'll see the headliner and you'll go, oh, okay, I saw this set or whatever, you know.
Right.
Or if you're headlining, you don't watch the other guy. So it's good. This is like, you know, every set is different. They're all a snowflake. Mm-hmm. They're all a beautiful snowflake of dick jokes. And Dave Attell, the finest. I know everybody says Bill Burr is the top comedian, but.
Well, how do you want to look at it?
To me, when you get up in that like upper echelon, what's the difference?
Well, there's guys who are the biggest draws, then there's guys who are the hottest at any given moment,
right?
And then there's guys that are just perennially great.
Now, Dave is not an arena comic,
no,
like Dave Chappelle or something, but in terms of a club level or small theater, can't get better, I think.
Yeah, well, it's you know, I think
which
it's,
is not a slam on Bill Burr, who I think is
no,
good too.
but it's also, you know, Bill Burr is the hotter guy because Dave's been around longer,
right?
You know, that's all.
Dave's just been kicking ass for 25 years. So,
yeah, Dave does a great show, and Corey will be opening. So come out to that if you're in the Detroit area.
There
come
you go.
See Corey. Come see Dave. So do you want to get into, I got a bunch of stuff. Do you want to get into, I mean, we've got sort of bad news, and we got funnier stuff. I mean, Charlie Sheen is HIV positive.
Is that really bad news?
if you were a porn star in the last decade,
sure,
I think.
Sure. If you were any of there must be several thousand strippers in the greater Los Angeles and or Las Vegas area that are currently getting tested.
Well, you know, I met Charlie. Now, it's funny. I watched this interview today on the Today Show this morning as we're recording this. It was on with Matt Lauer. And Matt said, you know, can you say, well, when was this? Was this in the Tiger Blood era? Was this in
HIV positive
when did
then?
He know?
And Charlie kind of gave a vague answer. Now, he may legally have to give a vague answer because apparently you can be in whatever state. There's 35 states in America that have a law that says if you have unprotected sex knowingly and you knowingly have the HIV virus and you don't disclose it, it can be considered a crime.
Yeah.
And there's people who've gone to jail for this. So he's risking something. But he said it was at the tail end of that. So I don't know what that means. I worked with Charlie Sheen at the Gathering of the Juggalos in August of 2010. Now, he claims he's known about this for four years,
roughly. So you're getting tested?
I did share with Charlie Sheen a microphone on that night.
Yeah?
Yes.
Is that it?
That's all we should, I swear.
No.
Listen.
You didn't run Bustos on a juggalette?
If that had happened, I would not be sitting here with you today doing this fucking podcast talking about an 89-year-old fucking comedian and a Tiny Tim album. Well, I would be in a clinic right now.
Why don't you give away the whole show?
Because I am. I'm billboarding.
Yeah, you're
I'm billboarding.
You're tagging.
I developed good technique since you've been gone from the show. I learned how to broadcast. But no, I'm saying I would be in a clinic having my dick scrubbed with a scrub brush and a bottle of bleach right
You'd
now.
You'd be taking a Silkwood shower.
I would be. I would dive into a bathtub full of hydrogen peroxide now.
Would you just go through that, like the martinizing process, whatever that is? Whatever, just be like, get on the coat rack and go.
I would. So
get steamed out.
Yeah. Stick the tube of steam up my asshole and in my urethra. And I would be.
I think Charlie did that one night. The Playboy Mansion.
It might have been how he got it. But no, if I honestly had done that, I would be scared for my life. I am not scared for my life. We did share a microphone. Yeah. We introduced Twisted.
Miss Juggalette didn't.
And you know what?
Didn't pull finger cuffs.
He was actually there for so little time.
Uh huh.
I've told this story on the show, but just to recap because it's in the news. You know, the Gathering of the Juggalos hit its zenith in like 2010, and they booked Charlie on the back of being, you know, this outlaw guy who quit Two and a Half Men and blah, blah, blah. So they booked him to be the host of the main stage, introduce all the different acts that were coming on.
Well, I think the Gathering of the head juggalo, his tastes are anybody that was famous in the 80s.
Well, actually, at that time, the guy who was booking the Gathering of the Juggalos was a guy named George Velakis, and George, George actually was pretty good about knowing what was hot, and he thought it would be an opportunity.
But I'm saying, Charlie. I'm saying Joe
no,
himself.
Joe himself likes.
Let's get Gallagher in here.
Well, yeah, Joe will generally get old school guys.
Jimmy Walker.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, you know, like George knew that this would be a good thing for the Gathering. The Gathering was this like most hated music festival, and you know it was on the back of
that title,
but it was on the back of the Miracles video, and ICP were these outlaws, and Charlie Sheen was this outlaw. So for both groups, it made sense.
Does outlaw describe what the Miracle video did for them?
Well, they were whatever, but you know, at the time, it made sense to have Charlie there. Charlie, I guess, flew in for, you know, way less money than you would expect, but it was still a lot of money. But basically, he was completely late. He was taking a private plane to go to Cave in Rock, Illinois, where the Gathering was held that year. You had to like fly into like Evansville, Indiana.
Yeah, it's like a,
and then take like a car for 2 hours.
I think it's easier to get into Rock, Assyria than it is to get into the Cave in Rock, Illinois.
Notice how many places in Cave in Rock, Illinois have been shot up by Islamic terrorists. Very, very few. Feel free to move there. And
they
be
can't
safe.
Get to. I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Bin Laden was there for five years.
He had a house.
Went to Pakistan.
Yeah, the big wall. And so Charlie was running late. He flew into Evansville, got on a tour bus, and came out. You know, but he was running so late that they had. Well, first of all, there was backstage. There was me and Aaliyah, who was on the staff of Psychopathic Records at the time. Were given the task of writing jokes for him to tell while he got there.
Yeah.
So I wrote a bunch of lame jokes about my new show is going to be called Two and a Half Juggalos. You know, like just real cheap pop kind of jokes. Nothing brilliant, but you know, things that would endear him to the crowd. Some Psychopathic references because he didn't know where he was going, what he was doing, and he was running so late that I ended up introducing. And then they're like, well, Upchuck, can you go host the main stage? Because Charlie's not here. So I had to introduce, like, Vanilla Ice and George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic because Charlie wasn't there.
You know, this is an important primer out there for the kids, and I know the kids love this show. I know the children listen to this show.
This is where Corey dumps on ICP. I'm going to sit back, let him do it. I'll join you in another minute. Okay.
No, no. I'm just saying, both of us.
Yeah.
Both of us grew up as very nerdy kids who loved television, loved wrestling, loved the rock and roll.
Yeah.
Me a little more comic books and stuff. And we've gotten the opportunity in our adult lives to associate with all these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back and I go, you can be like, yeah, I met Kid Rock. I met Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, I did meet.
I met Hammer.
Yes.
It's just the bizarre, like,
yeah.
One time I was at a Comic-Con, and I had the all-access pass, so I'm hanging out with Chewbacca, the Doctor from Star Trek, and Rob Van Dam. We're all smoking
right,
cigarettes.
Yeah.
It's just a weird life. And we didn't really do anything that, we just kind of went, hey, let's be around B-list celebrities, and we kind of found, it. Like, it took a lot of work as a comedian to get to stuff like this, but it's like we just kind of pointed in the direction of it, and I ended up.
Yeah, I mean, you eventually, when you do something and you pour yourself into it, it's easier, in some ways it's easier than you think to get into these kind of things, but at the same time, you can't come from nowhere and do it. You have to be.
There was a day when I was in the green room of the local TV station with Lou Ferrigno, Curtis Armstrong, who played Booger.
Yeah.
And Raj from What's Happening.
Yes.
And I just
thought, were all at the Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just thought, when I was like 8,
yeah.
If I was in a room with all these guys, my head would have exploded.
Well, I was at the same TV station with comedian John Heffron.
Yes.
And we met the Christmas Story cast.
Uh-huh.
Minus Peter Billingsley.
Oh, he was not there?
He's too big now, because Peter Billingsley is in with Vince Vaughn. That's his a-hole buddy.
Right.
So
I had a 15-minute conversation with Anson Potsy Williams about like porn.
Yeah.
And direct.
So, but I got to hang out with the guys from A Christmas Story, and I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. Meanwhile, these guys are kind of on the balls of their ass, you know, barely working in show business. And the one guy, Scotty Schwartz, like did porn, and he was a complete disaster.
Yeah.
But you know, I was it was still neat, you know.
You can see Joel preparing with Scotty Schwartz at
am I?
At Knuckle Blasters.
I think Scotty
in Pontchartrain, Indiana.
By the way, if anyone's getting a tube of steam shoved up their ass today, it should be Scotty Schwartz. if anybody's getting cleansed of the HIV today, let it be former child star Scotty Schwartz, because he's done all kinds of wacky shit. But anyway, so let me tell the story.
Oh,
so anyway, so Charlie, I go out. Charlie's late. Finally, Charlie shows up. He doesn't know where he is, but Charlie has to take over. I think he introduced Blaze Your Dead Homie and then Twisted. And, but I gave Charlie's people the jokes, or I gave it to my boss who gave it to Charlie. Charlie goes out in front of Blaze Your Dead Homie and is doing okay, trying to introduce people and be funny, and he ended up getting a couple things thrown at his head, and then he kind of bailed out, you know? Introduced Blaze,
really?
And ran off.
He had a couple objects thrown at his head.
He said,
what a pussy.
30
what
seconds.
What a goddamn coward.
Well, he didn't get over. You know, he was the biggest, my point, Corey.
You took a Fagel can in the head.
Listen.
You took a Fagel can in the head while driving Bobcat for your art.
The biggest celebrity in America couldn't get over. He was exposed after about 30 seconds on stage at this event.
Well, yeah.
So what I'm saying is that
Charlie came to Detroit and did the Fox Theater on his winning tour.
Yeah, he...
And, by the way, that's a cautionary example, too. You should tell that to everybody who takes your comedy class.
Well, he got booed off the stage.
You should tell that to people who take your comedy class.
Yes.
Here's an example. You can't just walk up and do this shit.
No.
You have to write jokes and prepare and learn how to perform.
Yeah.
And understand room psychology and how to handle the crowd. Mm-hmm. Charlie Sheen went up, tried to pretend he was a stand-up comic, and got pounded.
But I thought he more like played clips and did an interview, kind of.
Yeah, I think
he had Kirk Fox with him, who they didn't like.
No,
who's a pretty funny comic, I think, by all accounts.
Sure.
And then he got pumped. So Charlie goes out and he doesn't do well. So then they tell me I have to go up and do an announcement about, because we were running late, the wrestling was going to be delayed or something, that which would follow the main stage gathering. So I go up, and Charlie's there, and I introduce myself and say, hey, man, how you doing? He's like, oh, okay. And I go, well, you know, I saw what happened up there. And he's like, yeah. And I go, well, you know, I wrote some jokes for you. Oh, actually, this was when he came up. Anyway, he goes, I wrote some jokes for you. And he goes, yeah, I didn't have time to memorize them. So here's a guy who memorizes numerous
pages of dialogue,
pages and pages of sitcom scripts, couldn't memorize my five fucking lame Gathering of the Juggalos jokes. So he went out. I introduced the wrestling thing. Then I introduced Charlie. Charlie came out, grabbed the mic, introduced Twisted, ran off the stage, and that was it. So that was my experience with Charlie. So
Jimmy Walker come out and do that too, where he came out for like a minute and a half?
Jimmy came out and said one time, I just want to do a Q&A.
Uh-huh.
That was Jimmy's thing. I go, Jimmy, they're all here to see stand-up. And he goes, I'll do 5 minutes and then I'm going to do a Q&A. Mm-hmm. And I go, that sounds great, Jimmy. Meanwhile, it was the worst idea ever, but that's what he wanted. He got the feeling he didn't want to do it. I don't think I ever told this. Here's another Jimmy.
I thought he came out one night and just introduced the band and like.
Oh no! Yeah. That was a different. Like that was the oddball bonanza show in Philadelphia, where he came out and like I came out and did stand up, and you know told a few jokes and introduced like we had like a freak show. And I would introduce all of the freak show events. And then I would throw it to Jimmy, and Jimmy would introduce a band. And then we had another guy that would introduce the wrestlers. So it was three MCs, and we were all sort of sharing. And Jimmy, you just throw it to Jimmy, and Jimmy was like, all right, are you feeling good tonight? That was his, like, stand-up. It was just, you know. But Jimmy, Jimmy was doing stand-up a little over a year ago in Detroit. And I ended up working with him on the last night. He did a couple different shows. I worked with him at O'Mara's in Berkeley that night. But he had done Joey's Comedy Club, I think, on a Thursday. And then he was doing Comic-Con.
He did like
and then
he was, eight shows.
He did a bunch of different shows. Weird. His manager found a bunch of shit for him to do. Yeah. So Heather Kozlikowski, who was on this show not a few months ago, my ex-girlfriend, was opening for him on the Thursday. And she said, Heather was very excited to be working with any celebrity because she hadn't really done that. Mm-hmm. And so she was excited, and Jimmy Walker, and so the show was, you know, not well attended. It was like 150 people, maybe. It was okay, you know, 100, 150 people. And Heather thought she had a great set, and everyone loved Jimmy, and it was a really fun night. And she said to Jimmy, this is a great line, she said to Jimmy after, she goes, Jimmy, how do you feel right now? And Jimmy said, I'm neutral. So Heather was on this high of show business, and Jimmy Walker's like, I'm neutral, which is basically like saying, go fuck yourself. I'm miserable. This is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
But he just didn't give a shit and said, I'm neutral. That's a great line.
Look, we know that from just our experience doing comedy that, like, okay, the Dave Attell shows, I'm going to feel great.
Yeah.
Those are going to be fun.
Yeah.
Sold out house. Good times. 80% of the other shows I do, I'm neutral. It's gonna, you know what I mean? It's
going to
be...
The thrill leaves you and you go, this is a day of work. I went to work today. I punched in. I told my jokes.
Well,
I went... And, you know, and you have a...
The best you can actually hope for is that if you go up and you discover something on stage...
Yeah, I guess.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Because most of the time, I'll just do the set. And, you know, and the crowd will be... If I don't get it... I want a good response.
Yeah.
So I'm not getting a high off, oh my God, they really liked me this time. They should like me every time. So the worst I can do, you know what I mean? Like, the best I can do is good. I'm always expecting to do good. So that doesn't change much.
Right.
Maybe I'll go out, though, and I'll find a new bit.
Mm.
I'll fumble around and get a new bit. That's when it's really fun.
Right. I'm guessing Jimmy didn't have that sense of discovery.
No. You know what I mean? Like, you'll have a good show.
Yeah, I know.
They're laughing at everything you do, and throw something new in.
But I think
works.
For Jimmy, he's going, look, I got paid. I'm fine. I just, that's it. I'm guessing that's what I'm neutral meant to him.
Yes.
I'm okay.
Because he's, well.
I went and I did what I've been trained to do for 30 years.
I often accuse you of doing this.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's a job.
Yeah, it's a job.
I always said you were like the Joe Lunchpail, let me punch the clock. And a lot of young guys are like, it's magical.
Yeah, it's...
It's a dream time wonderland.
It ain't magical.
No, it's really not.
I mean, there's times when you want to draw a comparison, you know, the first time you get laid...
Sure.
...is amazing.
Right.
You know, when you're jumping on top of your wife or girlfriend after 5 years...
Yeah.
...the magic kind of goes away. And then sometimes it comes back, and then sometimes... I don't want to speak for anyone in this room, but I'm saying, you know, sometimes, you know, it's not... it's amazing,
no,
and sometimes it's
look,
just okay.
There is transactional marriage sex.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's...
Well, that's what comedy is.
Right.
It's transactional. You're paying me. I'm telling jokes. You're going to laugh. I'm going to get my money.
No, don't get it twisted. It's still better than working a real job.
No, yeah.
Unless there are some... Well, okay, there's some shows I've done that were not better than working a real... Where you're like, this is the worst. I just drove in the middle of the winter to some fucking indescript, nondescript, ugly place.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people didn't like me.
Or it's the humiliation of having to do a certain gig or... being up at a certain town and hoping that they like you and having...
I did a show in Midland.
Yeah.
That they were the worst audience I've ever had. They were just fucking awful people. Yeah. And I just was like, I hate every one of you fucking beef jerk. They all had freezers full of venison.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of dickheads.
It's funny when you're not in comedy, and I'm sure most people listening to this have never done stand-up. Some of them have, but... you think, like, how could a group of people collectively... be assholes? How can a random group, a seemingly random group of strangers, get together and be assholes? And I'm telling you, they absolutely
can
happens.
Be.
And I don't even know exactly why that is. I mean, people can point to certain environmental things. Oh, it's a certain town, and you know, this town, they've never seen good comedy here, and they have no taste, or you know,
Whitmore Lake.
It's, you know, you're playing in a certain venue, and that's who hangs out there normally, and that's not normally people that you would hang out with. And so they're assholes. But I'm telling you, it absolutely happens that people are jerk-offs sometimes. And maybe to a man, they would be nice people. But in a group, in that, you know, comedy is such a social thing. It's such a group dynamic that when you get disparate people together, sometimes it can be a wonderful, beautiful thing. And sometimes they can be assholes.
I was at Joey's this weekend, and the Saturday early show was sold out. Mm-hmm. And they were rocking and laughed at everything and were having a good time.
That's a good club for that.
And the second show, they were assholes.
It's amazing.
They were just collectively
it really is.
You know what I mean? And it was a fairly good, it wasn't like empty. It was a fairly good sized crowd.
Yeah.
You know, but when it's eight people, it's a struggle.
Yeah. Yeah, just because sometimes you don't have enough to really have that collective
comedy experience.
It's not quite an audience, yeah.
Yeah.
And then some nights you get the audience, but they're not all paying attention. Right. It does require a certain amount of attention on the part of the people.
I'd say anything north of 25, anything south of 25...
Yeah.
You don't think of them, they're not an audience.
It's sort of.
It's a random group of tables.
It's a bunch of individuals that you're telling jokes to just all at the same time.
Once you hit that 25 to 50, they're an audience.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want
to. When you hit 200, they're completely an audience and it's your fault.
Let's finish up on the Charlie thing. So he's
Fuck
got.
Right.
Well, yeah, so Charlie, you know, I mean, look, I don't know what's going on. The Inquirer has a big thing that comes out this week, and they're talking about Charlie. Might have had sex with men in addition to women, and they've pegging the number of 5,000 women. And then, you know, the goddesses have come out and spoken. Yeah. Bree Olson said that
she was on the Howard Stern.
Yeah,
show.
She would have sex with Charlie.
Yeah,
with a lambskin condom, which does not protect against HIV.
Right,
and she did not know at the time he was positive.
Right,
which sort of fits into the timeline where. He may have not been diagnosed. Oh, one thing I should mention about Charlie, and I know I've said it on the show. I think I've said it on the show. I know I've said it to people privately. He looked a fucking mess when I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was very, very frail. Now, I attributed that to cocaine. I attributed, you know, skinny, gaunt, sunken features to be crack cocaine. I guess that could have been AIDS. You know, I guess that would probably fit that description too. But he looked a mess. He looked like fucking shit. He looked okay on the Today Show today. I mean, they cleaned him up. His hair was dyed. He was wearing some pancake makeup. I think
he probably looked better than Matt Lauer.
Matt Lauer is doing Movember, so he is not shaved. So maybe he does look better than Matt Lauer. But
Today's show is such a hideous,
don't even
hideous.
This is an awful joke, but when did the Today Show get AIDS? What year was that diagnosed? Because
2007. When did they put Hoda and Kathy Lee on?
Oh, well, they're better than...
Actually, they're better.
They're almost better than the main show.
No, they're better than the main
show. And then, you know, but they have a 9 o'clock hour. That's a different format. Yeah. And then they have the Hoda and Kathy Lee hour, which is all different. They have 2 hours of the main show. I can talk about the Today Show for 2 hours.
I got to tell you, you know, the Today Show is only... The only thing worse than the Today Show is The View.
Good Morning America... Well, it's funny. Good Morning America was worse than the Today Show. Then the Today Show decided to become Good Morning America. Now they might be worse than Good Morning America because they're yeah. And then The View is Ebola. The View is not even. If Good Morning America has AIDS, The View has the Ebola virus and is vomiting and shitting blood everywhere. That's what The View is.
What's the real then?
You know what the real is? Apparently the real is a hit. Apparently the real is like a show that has captured the imagination of people.
Well,
idiots apparently, but no, you know.
You know what, and I said this to so I did 6 shows this week.
Yeah.
And they were not all good. One of the shows, the audience was a fundraiser for like a hospital. I don't even know. It was like a group of nurses.
Yeah.
And it was like 150 middle-aged black nurses.
Oh.
Right? My audience.
Well.
My crowd, finally.
I could have pulled a date out of that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
It was a lot of ladies named.
Got laid after that.
It was a lot of ladies named Bernice and,
yeah.
and Quayshonda.
Yeah.
And whatever, you know, and it yeah. was like they were not having it for me.
Absolutely.
But I started going off on Empire.
You're not for them. Oh.
And they actually liked that. I went
okay,
off on
Empire.
Like, you know, but I was like, you understand that no white people watch that show, right? You
right.
understand that what? That's a hit show because every black person
what?
In the country watches it and not one white person.
You didn't go, ooh, that's so ratchet.
Yeah.
Did you say that ever?
No.
They should have booked me. What the hell?
I should have said that.
You should have said, ooh, work that in. I'm going to give you that one. That's for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Charlie Sheen, I don't know what to think of this. I mean, I guess, and apparently, you know, he said he's paid off on the Today Show $10 million to keep this secret. That all of the, you know, he had to disclose this to people, and he uh-huh. would have his lawyer get them to sign some sort of confidentiality agreement, and then he's paid out $10 million over the last few years to keep the secret, and he said he's not paying it out anymore. So, and he said he's running low on money, believe it or not. That's the other story out of the Today Show interview. Charlie Sheen has pissed away his money, or he's given it away to whatever, to strippers and baby mamas and all kind of stuff.
That
he's got
is...
two ex-wives. He's got a bunch of kids.
Well, good for Charlie. I mean, he's a contemptible pile of human filth. I mean, I'm not shocked by any of
no,
this.
No, you shouldn't.
You mix drug addiction, you mix, you know, heroin and or whatever.
Well, he said coke. He said he never did injectable drugs. He said that in the interview.
Yeah.
He said he admitted to doing cocaine. He did a lot of cocaine and drank too much.
Again, do we trust this news source?
I've heard crack also in tabloid reports about him. But
well, you know, I think also if you're doing a lot of drugs, your mm-hmm. immune system's weaker.
That might be true,
and
too.
And you're probably
yeah.
more susceptible
but
to getting HIV.
When you're stoned out of your gourd on cocaine and the stripper and, you know, the porn star wants to put her tongue in your asshole, you're probably way more likely to say yes in that position than you might be if you weren't whacked out of your brain on drugs. So, yeah. And I'm guessing that's the way that you can contract HIV.
Maybe if you pick... How does Tiger Woods doesn't have HIV?
Because
he
I don't
was
know.
Scraping every skank he could out off the parking lot.
But isn't it amazing that that's all the guys that get HIV, though, is Charlie Sheen? And you know... I mean, look, Danny Pintaro got HIV, the kid from Who's the Boss. Right. But, you know, he was a gay man.
Is anybody giving Dustin Diamond a kiss? How about the fucking...
Tom Sizemore just released a statement. He's completely healthy. Just for the record.
What about the Girls Gone Wild guy?
Joe Francis?
Yeah.
If you want to look up, here's a great story. You know, Joe Francis was extorted. The gunman had him pleasure himself with a dildo on video, and then extorted money from him. It's a great story. You got to dig deep for it, but it's out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, Joel's on the dark web. He's out there. He's out there. Joel reads tabloid sites
I read. There's a web. In fact, I'm going to put this on the thing. There's a celebrity blind items website where they give you the answer to all the blind items from the tabloids and the websites. And it's great. And by the way, that website had the Charlie Sheen thing over a month ago. Just for the record.
Uh-huh.
And they had Blake Shelton.
Well, they're an accurate news story.
They had Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani dating 6 weeks ago.
Well,
6 weeks ago.
But I'll tell you what. I have been working for a while. It's been delayed but I've been working for a while on a profile on a sports blogger.
Oh.
A local sports blogger who is pretty infamous.
Okay.
But has been completely dead nuts accurate about, like, he had Harbaugh going to Michigan long before anybody. You know what I mean? So sometimes
there's some truth.
Sometimes these sources are you know, we're all the because all the guys like Adam Schefter were saying,
yeah,
oh well, there's no way Harbaugh will leave the NFL.
Sure, yeah.
And he was talking to like his friends from who had played with him at Michigan, mm-hmm. and you know what I mean, and people in Ann Arbor, and they were like, oh yeah, he's coming.
Yeah.
Like,
well, here's the thing about this website that I read. You know, I used to not. I used to read this like many years ago, and I kind of stopped for a long time. And then when I saw this blind items coming, in fact, it was a blind item, the Charlie Sheen blind item came out, like, you know, and when I read that, I said, okay, this website had the answer. But the blind items used to really be blind items. They were pretty hard to guess. The guys that are writing them, not writing them as blind as they used to be. You know, they're writing them, they're basically giving you the story without the name, you know. You know, and whatever. If they're true, if they're not true, who knows? I think a lot of people are up to a lot of stuff that we never hear about, and so if you want to know about John Travolta and Kelly Preston and their secrets and whatever, there you go. Read about it.
Well, but you know what secrets do they? I mean,
well, it's
here's the other thing. when the Charlie Sheen when you broke the Charlie Sheen news to me, I didn't end anywhere else. It wasn't really news. I just went.
Nah.
This would be like, I could name, I could write down the name of a local comedian died from alcohol poisoning, and you write down the first name that comes to your head.
All right, I'm writing it down.
Uh-huh.
I'm written down, I shouldn't say, but Bill Hildebrandt. Actually, Bill's still alive, that's a joke.
You know what I'm saying?
We got to get him back on the show. Bill's
great. I just worked with Bill.
Yeah, I hung out with him a couple weeks ago. Fun times.
He's the irascible old
But master. You're saying Charlie Sheen, not a surprise. Not a surprise. I mean, you know,
okay.
No.
If they were like, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg announces she's HIV positive, I'd be very surprised. You know? Charlie, not as much.
The Ruth Bader Ginsburg sex tape. That would surprise you.
That shocked the shit out of me.
But here's the thing. Yeah. When I heard the blind item that Charlie Sheen, I said, well, it's not like he's ever going to talk about this. I assume this would be kept a secret until he died, and then maybe it comes out later. But no, it came out. That's the amazing part to me. Not that he had AIDS, but that he decided to go public with it. And obviously, you know why he came public with it, because he was being extorted for all this money, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, it's wild. So.
There you go.
All right, you want to do comedy next? You want to go, or do you want to talk about France real quick? Because I know you spent some time in Paris, and and I don't want to bum everybody out. No,
I've been to France twice. Our honeymoon, we went to Paris, and it's a great country. It's a beautiful place. I don't know if I've ever, you know... Paris is glorious. It is just really, you walk around every corner and you go, wow, this is, you know, outstanding.
Right.
So it's beautiful. You know, where they're having the candlelight vigils now was where our hotel was for our honeymoon.
Okay.
It's in the Place de République in the 10th arrondissement. And I know the problem with French is that the language itself sounds pretentious. You can't even say anything.
Awful. But, it's truly awful.
Paris is an international city.
Mm-hmm.
It's a global city. It's like the capital. It's the de facto capital of Europe.
Sure.
Even though I went to Strasbourg, which is the actual parliament capital of the EU. But Paris is like a global capital. Everybody's there, right? They blew up a Cambodian restaurant.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
How many Cambodian restaurants are in Damascus?
Yeah.
So every idiot on Facebook, this is all I got to say.
Okay.
There's been a certain trend right now amongst my beloved progressive friends. Who are like, well, why didn't you care about Beirut when they bombed Beirut?
Yeah, those people are assholes.
I got to tell you, why don't you go sit on that, okay? Because you know why Paris trumps Beirut? Because it's fucking Paris. That's why it trumps.
Right.
Also, you know, tragically, and maybe this is something we should care about and maybe worry more about more as a society, but... You know, bombings in Beirut are not news. Much like Charlie Sheen getting HIV is not really news.
Well, that's the thing. It's unusual for this many people to die in Paris
right.
at a rock concert uh-huh. and a football match right. in a cafe. That's unusual.
A major assault yeah. on a global capital, a city that everyone on Earth knows about,
yeah.
you know, where Paris was probably, I think, still the number one tourist destination in the world.
Yeah.
Millions of people a year visit Paris.
Sure, yeah.
It's going to out-Trump some shit that happens
yeah,
in Beirut.
Yeah, that's
which
know.
Doesn't mean that what should tell you is that, one, Beirut is an issue, too, because they're not just striking against, American targets, Western mm-hmm. targets, France. This is this is a war
right.
that has been going on inside the Middle East yeah. amongst people.
Well,
so please take your fucking Neapolitan Facebook profiles there's a scolding culture that mm-hmm. really frustrates me
mm-hmm.
because any real progressive would say Paris is like everything we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an open city.
Yeah.
It's a liberal yeah. city. It's, you know what I mean? It's a socialist fucking, everybody gets health care.
Yeah.
They're all drunk on wine. They grow out their pubic hair. It's a fucking wonderland. It's a beautiful place. That's what you should be standing up for.
Yeah. Well, if that's what it is, I mean, that's the other thing though, is like, you know, as much as liberal white America likes to look to Europe as their ideal situation, underneath the surface of all that, you have, you know, race and culture wars, arguably worse than we have in the United States,
sure,
with immigrants and that kind of stuff. And part of it is that all those people live on top of each other, you know. Africa ain't that far from Europe. You know,
well,
and the Middle East is not that far from Europe. So as much as you want to say
I will tell you the difference. I'll tell you the difference between Europe and America, at least as far as I've been able to determine. And certainly I'm not an expert, but, you know, having been to Europe a few times, European countries are tolerant of other people. They'll say, okay, but they're not. It's one thing. You can live in Germany and not be a German.
Sure, yeah.
And in America, pretty much, you come here and you're part of the culture.
Right, yeah.
There may be some enclaves that are a little
sure.
more resistant,
mm-hmm.
but there's, you know, and people are complaining about this in the Southwest, but people come to America and end up eventually,
they want to be
Americans. They want to be American.
Well, that's my family, you know. My family came from Italy.
Yeah.
And when they talk about, you know, how come, you know, the kids, you know, my grandparents didn't speak very good English,
mm-hmm.
but my dad and his, you know, brothers and sisters, they all wanted to learn English. And I asked, we were talking about this, you know, just in last year or so. And my aunt was saying, you know, we wanted to be American. We didn't want to speak Italian to each other.
Yeah.
We wanted to speak English because that's what American
right,
people spoke.
Right,
we wanted to do that. We wanted to be Americans. But the other thing is that Americans are more accepting of letting those people become Americans. Whereas in places like England and France and stuff, where they go, no, you're still West African or you're still Indian,
right.
you're still Pakistani. We're not embracing you as a Briton or a
that to me seems to be kind of a problem.
Yeah.
In which,
well, yeah, but that's a different attitude.
Right,
so
right.
don't think that Europe is this bastion of liberalism where everybody is welcome, because those attitudes are more prevalent than they are.
Saying, as a society, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Is it? Does France and Western European countries do the best job of integrating? No. And you know what? But they do a hell of a lot better job.
Well,
I'll tell you what. They do a hell of a lot better job of integrating and accepting the rest of the world than how many Cambodian restaurants? How many? You know what I mean? Who's flooding to the Middle East to go live there?
No, nobody.
What
yeah.
influx
no,
of
absolutely.
People is going in there?
Yeah.
You want to talk about a closed society? So let's get our fucking facts straight
yeah,
about
well,
like what we should be
yeah.
holding. Where do women go to school and hold high cabinet positions and run for office?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's France.
Well, listen.
Where do they shoot the bitches
hey,
in
listen,
the head for going to school?
Just to play counterpoint, about every 6 months, one mental patient moves to Syria to join ISIS. So one American guy drops out of college to go join the jihadi revolution. Dana Gould.
I know one Arab with a puppet that lives in Detroit
okay.
that we could send.
He's Armenian.
No,
other one. Okay.
No.
All right, listen. This is Dana Gould on Facebook today, which I thought was interesting.
Dana Gould's great. I love Dana Gould.
Here's what Dana Gould says. He says, some think the refugees want to come here, stockpile weapons, and start killing innocent people. Others feel they won't fit in so easily. There you go. So he's
funny.
Drawing comparisons. Americans shoot each other all the time in public, and maybe they just want to be like us in his point. But yeah, and then Eagles of Death Metal was the concert that was attacked, which is so bad. And, you know, and one thing that no one's reporting, and it was, I think it was 90 some were killed at the Eagles of Death Metal concert, 89, 90, something like that. I mean, you're so trapped when you're at the front of that pit at a show like that.
Absolutely.
I mean, there ain't fucking nowhere to go in a situation like that.
Yeah.
And it's terrible. But one thing that isn't being reported a lot of places is that, you know, they, when Roger Waters said that no Western rock act shouldn't play Israel for whatever reason because of that, you know, Eagles of Death Metal said, fuck you, publicly,
right,
and went and played Israel. I don't know if that they were targeted for this attack based on that. I haven't really seen that reported. No one's drawn that conclusion. But boy, I mean, it makes you think a little bit, you know, like maybe that could have been the case.
It becomes abundantly clear that these guys do think out what they're doing.
Yeah. Do you want a little Eagles of Death Metal for those of you that don't know?
Yes, and I will say...
there's some Eagles of Death Metal.
That, which is not death metal, by the way. And watching, like, Fox News try to figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. The name apparently is a pun on, you know, the Eagles, you know, that if it was really catchy death metal, you would be the Eagles of Death Metal. And they were talking about some death metal band that's Josh Homme and this other
they're
guy.
They're like a rock band. They're well, like a pop punk rock band.
Here's another. Here's more Eagles of Death Metal here.
Yeah.
Well, people call them psychedelic hillbilly rock, sort of.
You know.
I mean, actually, this is a lot of their stuff is in commercials. Like, I've heard this and stuff. It's okay. I mean, I'm not a big fan, but you
they're
know,
a good band. I would go see them.
But, No reason for the jihadists to be mad at this.
No.
Yeah. It's just a bunch of guys taking drugs and having fun.
Yeah, it's like Bruce Rock.
Yeah.
You know, power pop, whatever.
Anyway.
Look, anyway, yeah, but watching people go, well, it's death metal. No, it's not, dummy.
No.
You figure it out. But this is the problem with all this stuff.
Yeah.
This is the problem with all this stuff. People get on and they make immediate fucking knee-jerk dumb statements and reactions, and they want to scold you and go, well, you didn't care about Beirut. I'm like, well... You know what? You know what? You know what? France has never done? Bomb us.
Yeah.
You know what happened in Lebanon? They blew up our U.S. Marine barracks in the 80s.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to have any context of history.
No.
Nobody. I'm just saying you're all fucking dumb. That's what.
Well, listen. The culture now is one of outrage.
Yes.
And then so quick to condemn and shame.
Yeah.
That's the two things that our culture's become good at. It's completely backwards with what you think it should be. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's just because people have an easier voice or if people don't. Or is it just, you know, when you're hit with these, with an infographic about some Beirut bombing that you never heard about, if all of a sudden you go, okay, now that's how I, like, are people's minds that easily twisted nowadays? Do people have no convictions of their own? Is everything just, well, my friend said this on Facebook, so I'm going to feel that way? Because you don't, you know, you wouldn't organically go, well, I, you know, that Beirut bombing that no one's talking about that I heard about 3 weeks ago on PBS or on a, you know, no one's thinking that. They're all just reacting to some meme that's floating around. Is that? Why can a meme inflame people so much to make them to this call to action for me to be morally outraged, you know, to the nth degree, and yet something happening across the street from them at a house no one would care about?
Well,
it makes no sense.
It's impossible to actually gauge how much someone cares about. You know,
that's true.
It's easy to make a blanket statement and go, "Well, you don't care about brown people."
Well, yeah,
which is insane.
Yeah.
Because guess what? Paris, like I said, is a multicultural place.
Right.
There are, you know, there's kebab stands.
Oh, and
you
people,
know, everywhere.
People
Arabs
at
and,
that concert were from all types of different countries
and
different places,
right.
And yeah, they're not.
This is not like Lillehammer, Norway or something, or Livonia, where it's all white. I'm just saying it's a...
Any major city is going to be diverse. Right. I mean, New York City is incredibly diverse.
Paris is
Detroit
actually
is diverse.
You know,
yeah, I mean...
Even more than some other places in Europe,
yeah.
It's a pretty cosmopolitan place. So people, I don't know, people just love to stay... Like I said, they like to be... Everybody goes into this PTA mode.
Right.
Where they just get all judgy and bitchy and... And you know what? Your point about does the media do a good enough job of covering world politics.
Yeah.
Or world events. No.
No, but...
But do people care about world events as much as they should? No. Does that not mean that when a big thing like this happens in Paris, people shouldn't care?
Yeah.
That's what cracks me up. It's like, oh, I'm supposed to not care about that.
It's amazing. It's, you know, or they think that you can't possibly care about two things at the same time. Like, somehow, it's the same thing they make about the government. Well, the government is you know, spending all this money on this. Why aren't they spending money here? Well, they're spending money in both places.
Right.
You can do two things at once. You can care about two issues simultaneously.
Yes. Yes.
When Paris happens on that day, people are going to care about it, and you don't have to sit here and go, why don't you care about this? Why don't you care about that? We care about all those things. Some things get reported more than others, and that's fine. But remember how I talk about things? I'm trying to remember an issue that I just said. And I say this a lot on this show.
Like
and
Charlie
I really
Sheen.
No, but I there's things that come up, and I go, you know, that's not... Okay, like the girl... The security guard took the girl in her school desk and dragged her across
yes.
the floor.
This that is, kind of day of coverage.
I don't care about that. It's not my problem. It doesn't affect me. It's not my world.
Right.
You guys go... Ferguson was one. I just went, that's not my... You guys figure that out. I can't be outraged about all these things.
Well...
I can't be... I can... I only...
Ferguson
you know,
was a much bigger
Ferguson
incident.
Was a bigger deal,
this
but
was
it's
a
still...
Solitary,
still
okay. At the end of the day, now I didn't think that I didn't.
I'm only using those as right. examples. I'm not saying that's it, but I also go, it's not my, you know, just because I can know about that instantaneously as it happens, just because it's written on my Facebook feed doesn't really mean I should care. I'm not a dick for not caring about that. I'm really not, because I have things that I care about in my life. That's not one of them. I don't see any point in caring about that. You guys figure that out. I know that people will be outraged, and the people that work at that school or the people in Ferguson, Missouri, you guys fix your shit. I'm going to worry about my shit. The world will be a better place if we all solved our own problems. I'm not solving the problem of, oh, let's fire that security guard or let's make sure. That's not solving anybody's problems. My internet outrage, it's not doing any good to anybody.
Well, it's important to bring stories to light and draw.
Okay.
But
I'm with you.
You're right, though. When it happens in a meme, it seems like it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's the trivialization of, you know, I mean, you know, am I supposed to care that Drake danced funny in his music video? You don't care about that. I don't care about that. So why? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
It's proportionality. As I'm always,
it is.
I always joke about how, you know, you can be a black celebrity forever. Like, they'll be like, Morris Chestnut appears in an all new.
You know what? There's black people that would tell you you're dead wrong on that and that there's celebrities that aren't. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know
right.
what I mean, though? Like,
right.
Like, it's a smaller bubble.
It is. Yeah.
It's a smaller bubble. And so some guys that white people never think about
yeah.
are like a big deal.
Sure.
Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Morris Chestnut.
Sure.
Case in point. Who would be about the 270th most recognized figure amongst the general public. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, sure.
A list of Hollywood actors, you
yeah.
know. But, so it's proportionality. So it's everybody. And I think what makes this fucking shit worse is this stuff.
Yeah.
Because this is, okay.
What are you showing me something? What are you
here's
doing?
You want to add a movie review to the list here?
Well,
Steve Jobs.
All right, Steve
Did
Jobs.
You see Steve Jobs?
No, I didn't. Let's move on, though, before we get to movie reviews.
Yeah.
Let's time for us to really get outraged, Corey.
Okay.
Because an 89-year-old man went up at an open
oh,
mic
Jesus
a couple
Christ.
Weeks ago, and oh. we haven't... And this is the definitive show where we cover all comedy. This
yes.
is the definitive... We
yes.
know that.
Screw you, Chris Hardwick!
This is the... Well, we cover comedy on this show. People
yes.
like that about us.
That show, The Nerdist, has turned into, oh, man, you were so awesome in this thing.
Thank God. How much Back to the Future coverage did The Nerdist do?
Okay. I
Could
wanna,
the Back to the Future
right,
get any more
right,
coverage?
Right, before we move on.
All right.
Let me just take a brief moment to speak about Back to the Future.
That was ridiculous.
Okay.
That was the craziest thing
okay.
ever.
Back to the 1985 Back to the Future. Great movie.
Yeah.
Back to the Future 2. Fun.
Yeah.
But not a great movie.
Fun and really a good first act.
Yeah.
The rest of that movie, garbage. Good first act, though.
You're saying you don't like the evil Biff universe?
Well, no, that was I guess the beginning, before that, yeah, sort of
it's
the
mostly
middle
a chase movie where Marty's running around
no, but
trying
when,
to get the
when you
sports almanac.
When you get to see the future with all of the references to the first movie, and sort of the references to what was happening at the time, and you know, Jaws 17 and the Cubs in the World Series. That's kind of fun.
Okay, so
it's a fun alternate history.
Amy watched 2 and 3 back to back recently because they were on like TBS.
That
or something.
Poor woman.
Well,
three slows the pace down and is kind of a fun, harmless thing.
The first one I will say is legitimately a great movie.
It is, absolutely.
In terms of emotional impact, comedy that works. It's fun. It moves. It zips. It's like a textbook example.
A modern classic.
Yeah, it's a modern classic. It's a
blockbuster movie.
Textbook example of how to make a popcorn movie.
Crowd-pleasing.
Like a crowd-pleasing kind of movie. First one's great. It's smart. It's layered. Second one, third one are more like, the, you know what I mean? Okay. The first one is like a really excellently prepared steak dinner.
Mm-hmm.
The second two are like a Dorito.
Well,
you know what I mean?
The,
they're not good for you, but they're fun.
It's the classic thing of you're written into a corner by the story.
Okay.
And in order to serve, to make this story go where we want it to go, we have to do things that are not,
now,
you couldn't have done in the first
now
movie.
Now, back to this, Back to the Future.
The anniversary
the
of
Back to the
when Marty
day,
went to
was
2015.
It, was it October 21st or something?
It was, yeah, something like that.
Okay. And every asshole freaked out about this. Okay, and why do you think it... Okay, and it popped up in everybody's feed.
For nonstop.
And there were story after story and listicles and articles about it. And MSNBC covered it all day.
How do they cover that all day? What do they do?
Each hour... Okay, so I, you know...
What do you do to celebrate?
I will, you know...
But first of all, let me just say...
Mm-hmm.
NBC is owned by Comcast, which owns Universal, which owns the Back to the Future movies.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. That's what I'm getting at.
Oh, okay. I ruined
that. No, it's exactly what I'm getting at, though.
On the punchline.
It was all integrated as part of this merchandising for NBC Universal.
Do they send a guy out to Universal Studios and he stands out there
no,
by the ride?
No, they just throughout the day, you know, NBC is, now they're going more into like a more newsy format. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, kind of like CNN, where it's like all kind of just headline newsy all day, and then they'll do Rachel Maddow and whatever at night. And now Brian Williams is on a lot.
Yeah, he's been covering Paris on
he's
MSNBC.
The breaking news, but he breaks. Yeah. He finds an excuse to break. They're like, Brian Williams will come on when there's breaking news.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like every afternoon about 2 o'clock, he finds a reason to break in.
Well, just put him on.
Just give him a show anyway.
Put him on.
But instead of doing like segmented shows, it's kind of more like sections of the day. But it seemed like throughout the day they'd be like, now we're talking to Leah Thompson.
Yeah.
Like, they brought the guy who played Goldie Wilson is here. You know what I mean? They just brought all these, like, you know, Tom.
By the way, the guy who played Goldie Wilson is coming in next. If we can wrap this up, I've got to do another, just so you know.
Right.
If you can move along, Goldie.
Right. I think excited. Tom, we've met
Tom Wilson.
We've met
I've never met Tom Wilson.
Oh,
no.
He came to the Comedy Castle.
Yeah, he's played the Comedy Castle and he used to play chaplains and stuff.
Yeah,
he does local comedy.
He's a nice guy.
Comedy circuit. Yeah, he seemed like a good guy.
Maybe I interviewed him. I think that might have been him.
I've seen, didn't we play his song? He has a song about what was it like to be in Back to the Future, and he wrote us, he does a guitar.
Instead of people asking him, he wrote a song, which is, instead of asking me questions about being in Back to the Future, just play this song.
Yeah, I'm going to play this song.
Yeah.
What was Michael J. Fox like? He's nice. Well, you know, it was like that. It was pretty good. But the coverage of that was ridiculous. Let's just
And not only was it NBC Universal putting it on their show, on their channel, it was Pepsi launched a Pepsi throwback.
The actual bottles from the 2015
movie. And Nike was like, we did the shoes.
Yeah.
And Nintendo had some shit. It just seemed like everybody, there was like all this product integration.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you didn't realize that or you didn't recognize that this is all fucking backed by Pepsi, nobody actually gives a fuck about a fictional movie's pretend date of being
right.
In the future.
Well, because it really is like the 20, well, the movie, there's no movie anniversary because it was 89, so it's like the 26 year anniversary of that movie.
Yeah.
Right, isn't it something like that? Yeah, it would be 26 years.
Right.
Back to the Future 2 came out in 1989.
Right, but nobody's fucking sitting there going...
It's the fictional timeline.
Who's actually sitting there? I mean, actually...
USA Today printed those... The front page of USA Today in the movie, the real USA Today put those out. You can buy those.
So there's another product placement. Yeah. USA Today, Pepsi, you know, Nike. Everybody... So it's advertising. It's all just salesmanship. And so take your Back to the Future and get Ben with it.
But I like Back to the Future, and I'll still like Back to the Future, but...
No, nothing wrong with the movies.
Here's my point. Nothing made me want to watch Back to the Future 2 on the day of the anniversary.
Exactly.
It's not that good a movie. I don't care that much. By the way, if you hate commercialism, don't go into a store that has Star Wars items.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Because I was at... Now, listen.
Wait. I'm sorry. Why don't you just say, don't go into a store?
A store. Well...
What store does not...
Brookstone
has Star
Wars
items.
I'm going to confess, because I'm part of the problem, Corey. I went and picked up Star Wars Battlefront on the PlayStation 4 at Best Buy. And
oh, Jesus.
I was in there. But while I'm standing in line to get my game, there's plush dolls and fucking just Darth Vader kids hats.
Mm-hmm.
And the Darth Vader toaster, the Darth Vader mini fridge, the Millennium Falcon Bluetooth speaker. Yeah. Was on sale. I'm not making these things.
And they're
up.
Selling stuff for the new characters you don't even know yet.
Right. There's a 24-inch Kylo Ren plush doll with working lightsaber.
Exactly.
Who the fuck even knows who Kylo fucking Ren is?
Right. Ooh, is that a Dameron Poe?
Exactly.
Poe like, Dameron or whatever.
Poe Dameron, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Right. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, the Star Wars stuff is out of control, too. And I'm sick of it. And hopefully the movie's good, but who knows? I mean, I'm going to see it. You're going to see it. But at the same time,
know who's not going to see it. Critics.
Well, yeah, that's the other side. So I was getting to, you know, the critics.
Yeah.
They've said that no critic screenings for... Now, I'm guessing they're going to do... You were thinking they would do it the night before or something.
I think that what will happen is they're not going to just do them real early, but... Well,
but don't they have to do premieres though?
What they're not going to do is screen them before the deadline for the Critics Society voting.
Well, but here's my point though. Don't you want to do are they not going to do the premieres? Because I think they're worried about the spoilers getting out. But if they do a premiere, you're still showing it to 200-300 people.
Here's as a member of the Detroit Film Critics Society. Here's what happens. All these film critics societies vote. Okay. Now, I think L.A. has, it's much like with the goddamn election, where Iowa's like, we're the first primary in the country. L.A. is now like, we're the first results, or New York and L.A. getting a fight over, well, we're the two biggest critic societies, so we'll beat everybody else. So then Chicago goes, let's move ours up.
Yeah.
And then fucking the Cedar Rapids, Iowa
Critic
Society moves theirs up or whatever.
My feeling is, are they going to, if they're not, because there are movies that don't screen for critics, but yet they screen for the public, and I don't know, I would guess those are out for sure then. Because if they're worried, apparently J.J. Abrams is worried about spoilers. Apparently, you know, I believe the, if you don't want to hear Star Spoiler, please turn off the show right now. I'm going to give you 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Oh, I don't
want
to hear spoilers.
3, 2, 1. Let me tell you, apparently Luke Skywalker is going to reveal that he has HIV. I don't want to ruin it for anyone. Apparently there was something with there was something with the Rancor. He was in a pit with Jabba.
He and Boba Fett went to the Playboy Mansion one night and got in the grotto.
If you were in prison in Jabba's compound for as long as he was, I mean, you would pick up something. You would pick something up.
There's AIDS all over the walls.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're getting all kinds
of...
You know what? They got space HIV. They had, like, some kind of crazy...
If you went to the Hive of Scum... What was the town that was the...
Yeah.
The Hive of Scum?
That's right. Tantooine. Yeah.
No, it was the city on Tantooine.
Mos Eisley.
Mos Eisley, yes.
If you...
You picked it up there.
Let me tell you. If you banged one of Jabba's green dancer chicks, good luck with that.
Right. You really thought I was going to ruin Star Wars for
I didn't.
It was a joke. If you skipped the spoiler, it was a joke. I don't know a spoiler. But they're hiding whatever he does in the movie, though.
Yes,
that is true.
They are.
But anyway, so, you know, I don't... I mean, I guess I would like to not be spoiled if I was going to see the Star Wars, so I guess I'm in favor of it. I don't know that they care about critics' awards. I don't think J.J. Abrams should be all that biting his nails. J.J., if you're listening, don't bite your nails about Best Picture, bruh. It ain't happening.
Well, I know.
I know
they don't care about that.
Yeah, if they don't care about that, then...
And the critic societies are going to be like, well, boo-hoo, but you know they weren't going to win anything.
I think I'm okay with that. I think I'm okay with not getting early reviews on this. And they should be fine. They're already selling the tickets, and a lot of them have sold out at least the first night, as far as I can tell. So who gives a shit? Anyway, all right, that's our story. Let's talk about the 89-year-old comedian, because, you know... This is the most important thing in the show,
uh-huh.
Right, isn't it? What could be more important than this? terrorism.
Uh-huh.
No. All right, so this 89-year-old guy goes up. Now, apparently, this was at Go Bananas Comedy Club.
In Cincinnati, Ohio.
In Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, he had... I read deeper into this guy and how apparently this guy... So keep this in mind as you're
deep
listening.
Deep reporting.
Well, he was part of a comedy class.
Yeah.
And part of the comedy class is they basically... A senior living center decided that they would offer a stand-up class to their residents. Mm-hmm. So they paid these guys from Go Bananas. I know, this is what makes it funny, right? So they offered...
Did Dave Waite teach that?
I didn't recognize the guy's name that taught the class, but where is it? Here? Oh, no, this is... Anyway, I can't find where that article is. Basically, I taught a class. This was the only guy, and then after completing this class, they said, if you want to come perform at Go Bananas, we'll put you up there. Mm-hmm. And of the seniors that took that class, this was the only guy who decided, I will actually go to the club and perform my stuff in front of people. So with that, I give you, and this is the first minute and a half or whatever, and God knows if we'll get through this or not, but I think you should help me get. I know you get real squirrely when I start playing clips, but let's try to get through.
I can handle it.
Chuck Easterly, 89-year-old comedian.
Everybody here at the comedy club has been very nice to me. You know, an old new guy, I guess you'd say. And the manager, he wished me well, and he said, "Don't die up there." I think he was talking about my jokes. When I left the home tonight, my wife said, "Break a leg." The manager said, "Break a hip."
All right, so how are we doing? Now, those are just little opening quips, not exactly jokes.
Nothing wrong with that.
But fine little opening things. If you were teaching a comedy class, that might be jokes that you would say, hey, open with something about how old you are, because people are looking at you when you're 89.
When I did do some comedy class teaching, people would come in and they would be like, I am a lesbian fire swallower.
Yeah.
But let me talk about how the salad bar, how the sneeze guard at the salad bar.
Right,
you know, I'd be
sure,
like,
yeah.
You're 7 feet tall. You might want to do a joke
my always thing is if you can talk about what the audience is thinking at any given moment, they're going to react well to it. Because you're saying what they're thinking. That's how comedy works a lot of times. That's why people think you're brilliant, because you said what they were all thinking. That's a
well,
lot
and
of
it's
words.
Just not. I mean, it's like you're not hiding the fact
that
you're whatever is going on with you. You know. So unfortunately, and if you're a guy in a wheelchair or whatever doing comedy, you're going to have to talk about
your wheelchair
being in a wheelchair.
All right, here we go.
I guess you're wondering why a guy would get up here at my age and make a fool of himself, but. I think it's because I'd like to prove to you and to myself that just because you get old, you don't have to stop having fun, and surprising things happen every day. Take, for instance, last summer, I was working out in the yard, and across the street, I saw this gorgeous young widow start coming over toward me. She came up, looked me right in the eye, and she said, "I know your wife is out of town, and I'm feeling a little horny. And I would like to have a few drinks and some wild sex. Are you busy tonight?" I said, "No." And she said, "Great. Would you mind watching my dog?"
Hey-o! All right. Now, that last joke... is clearly a joke that somebody wrote somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I was a little...
It sounds like a Rodney Dangerfield.
I was getting skeptical. Yeah, it does sound... Hey, I don't get no respect. The lady across the street said, "Hey, I want to get drunk and have sex." I said, "All right." She said, "Hey, can you watch my dog?" I'll tell you, I don't get
any
respect.
Right, right. I mean, it could be anybody.
Yeah. So then, you know, as it goes on, I was getting a little skeptical. And then I found this article. This was on Slate, on the Browbeat Culture blog. That viral 89-year-old stand-up comedian is a shameless joke thief. And basically, this guy typed in this guy's jokes into Google, And amazingly,
they popped up.
What came up were this guy's jokes. Now I'm gonna fast forward in this show a little bit.
Oh, that's a, you know, I never really thought of doing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And basically, I'll fast forward and we'll go through some of these other jokes that this guy told. Here's the next one.
I paid $150 for a penis enlarger, and they sent me a magnifying glass.
Okay, so the guy types this in. This is the guy on Slate. He says, it came, this has been going around since at least 2011. Here it is on the Will Ferrell Twitter page from September 3rd, 2013. I just spent $50 on eBay for a penis enlarger. Those bastards sent me a magnifying glass. Now, doesn't mean that Will Ferrell stole the joke. I don't know.
That sounds like a street joke.
It sounds like a street joke that Will Ferrell's retelling, which is, you know, Will Ferrell. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, again, and I talked about this with Bill Bouchard last time about Amy Schumer and her sort of street jokes that she was telling, and, you know, she was being accused of stealing them from Patrice O'Neill, who might have gotten them off the internet. So anyway, these go on and on.
I had after the show, an audience member was coming up and talking, you know, people get excited, be like, oh, you were so funny, whatever. And they were like, how did you feel when Robin Williams died? You know what I mean? And I don't want to be like, oh, yeah. I don't want to be a dick.
Yeah.
But I mean, I was sad that Robin Williams died. Sure, I liked Robin Williams, but I wanted to be like, well, he had a reputation as being a joke thief. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, they don't need to know.
Right. Let's go on with this.
You know, old guys, old people think about death once in a while. I'm no exception. In fact, I called my family together a few months ago, sat them down, and I said, in no way do I want to live in a vegetative state, kept alive by a machine and fed liquid from a bottle. If that happens, pull the plug. They got up, pulled the plug on my computer, and threw away my wine.
All right. So that one, according to the Slate articles, has been going around since 2007. There's a hyperlink. I didn't follow it. But then the next line, they have an attribute.
But I'm going to get back after you because I know what my last words are going to be. Picture everybody gathered around the hospital bed, and I, in my last breath, I croak out, I hid $1 million under the...
Now, they have this attributed to 9gag, which is a website, and on their Twitter on July of 2012, Timothy Lee, I don't know if that's a comic or not, June 23rd of 2012.
I believe that's a serial killer.
Timothy Lee, I don't know who that is. He's like a black guy. All right.
People wonder what old folks do through their time. Everybody here at the comedy club has been very nice to me.
Screwed that.
And across the street, I saw this.
I completely screwed that up. I'm on a whole new thing here. Hold on.
Wine. I know what my last words are going to be.
We heard that.
And in my last breath, I croak out, I hid $1 million under the.
I apologize for making you listen to that twice.
People wonder what old folks do with their time.
Oh, actually, I cut it off there. But he tells a joke about sometimes I cook with wine a little bit. Sometimes I even add it to the food. And that is being attributed to either W.C. Fields or Julia Child. And it goes
so
on.
It's a fresh young bit.
It's a fresh. Well, when he was a kid.
He's 89 years old.
W.C. Fields was a new bit. Yeah.
Maybe he wrote it
for
Julia Child.
Yeah. So this goes on and on. He says, I changed my car into sound like gunshots. Now people get out of the way much faster. And they have that as one of those some EE cards that you see on Facebook as a meme. Yeah. They have it on there from God knows when. So, well, yeah, a lot of.
And by the way, whenever anybody puts those up with the, like, you know, Victorian ladies saying things.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
Like, where do those come from?
Well, they're,
you know what I mean? They're just in that, they're just in the ether.
But you know, at sometimes somebody wrote those.
Right, somebody wrote it at some point.
Like I have a I know I talked about with Bill Bouchard how I had this, I had a screenplay treatment called Community College 25 years ago that I can never do. Yes. Here's another one of my great script ideas that never got made. The guy who actually writes all the street jokes.
Yeah.
Here's the opening scene. I came up with the opening scene. It has to go from there. Somebody's going to steal this now, but at least it's on the podcast. At least I've got it protected for all eternity.
So it's been documented.
Here's the opening scene
November
of the guy.
November 15th, 2015.
Here's the guy who writes all the street jokes. Here's the opening scene. Mm-hmm. He's on. He's well. He's got his television
17th,
on.
17th, excuse me.
It's a, yeah, exactly. We're going back to the future. All right, here we go. So here's the opening scene. The guy, you see a guy sitting in his office somewhere, or he's a stockbroker, whatever he's doing. And he's watching this little black and white 9-inch television. Okay, mm-hmm. And on there, he's watching, and as he's watching, he sees the space shuttle Challenger explode.
Okay.
And he turns to his word processor, and he types in, NASA stands for need another 7 astronauts. And he puts that in the fax machine and sends that off. That's the opening scene to this guy who's a stockbroker, but is secretly the genius that writes everybody's street jokes. There you go.
And then
I will be collecting my Oscar in 14 months in Los Angeles
and
for
then,
the script idea.
And then he gets a message that his girlfriend just broke up with him.
I don't know.
And he walks
walks out
to his car, which is a Dodge Neon.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets in the Dodge Neon his knee on this and he hits his knee on that.
Hey, no. But, you know, that's what
you could do.
Well, that
is the guy's whole life is street jokes.
That's going a little more. Mine is more of a tale of like unknown genius. You know, the guy who kind of the Vincent Van Gogh of comedy.
But it's like
the guy who dies penniless.
He goes to his local bar and it's a rabbi and a fisherman.
A skeleton walks in and says, "I'll have a beer and a mop." Is that what you're saying?
You could do like a real surrealist kind of like everything.
Well, that would be more of a sketch, I think. Could be
a good sketch.
It's a good sketch.
Like everything the guy does. It could be a short. You could
inside the writer's room with Joel and Corey.
You could do a short version of that where everything the guy does is like a stock joke.
Is a stock joke. Sure, that's funny too. Yeah, but I thought, where's the guy who writes all these? He comes up with them, and yet, you know, like maybe he writes a joke, and the next thing you know, he sees Johnny Carson doing it. And he's not credited, or then he sees maybe he sees some comic get famous with these jokes,
like his mom. He sees his mom, and she waves, and someone hails a taxi. What's the fucking your mom's so fat? Oh. When she raises her arm, someone yells taxi.
I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? You can put some of your mama jokes into this.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking like this guy sees some comedian get famous off of his jokes,
right.
And he kind of has to confront him, and there's this power struggle between the two.
Let's do a treatment. We'll pitch it to Bobcat, and we'll go.
Bobcat will make that movie.
Bobcat,
that's the thing. Bobcat will fucking make that movie. Bobcat, right. If you're listening, let's do it, brother. Come on. Bobcat will make that in like 6 weeks. He didn't give a
fuck.
Absolutely.
Bobcat will rate that treatment.
All right, let's move on here. Speaking of TVs, Master of None is on Netflix. Speaking of comedians, Aziz Ansari's new series. Now, it's funny. I told you I was going to watch this. Before I sat down to watch it, I said, I'm watching this tonight. I don't know if you'd seen it. And you hadn't. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to sit down and watch it. So I watch episode one of Master of None. I always judge comedies, and I've said this before on the show, by the batting average. How many jokes work for me and how many don't? And that's how you judge a comedy. It's one way to judge it anyway. It's the way that I judge a lot of it. To me, the batting average of this fucking show, based on the first episode, I guess the pilot, This thing would have been in minor league baseball, and it wouldn't even be getting on the field unless 20 other guys ruptured their Achilles tendon. I thought none of these jokes worked. They all fell flat. It was awful. Okay. Now, I admired that the fact that they did it widescreen and single camera, and they tried to make it look like indie cinema or something, and I sort of thought that was neat. But to me, none of the jokes worked. Then I watched episode two, which was weird because it had, aside from Aziz Ansari, almost a completely different cast. and his parents are in it, which should scare you right away when a guy puts his parents in there.
Yes.
Meanwhile, his dad was pretty funny. His dad was actually
funny. I hate that.
I do too, but it worked.
I hate
it. It worked on the second
episode.
I hate
Aunt Skippy or whatever.
Yeah, I know. What Jimmy Kimmel's got the whole thing with.
What's her name? Aunt.
Whose aunt is and stuff?
Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, yeah.
What is it, Aunt?
I forget what
Aunt
his aunt's
Slappy,
name is.
Aunt
yeah.
Skippy.
But, it's, you know, it's Cousin Sal and Uncle Frank and these guys. Yeah. Uncle Frank's dead now. But,
right.
You know, but people that do that, I always think it doesn't work. I don't. His mom did only had, like, one line or something, so that didn't matter. But his dad was in a lot of the episode, and I thought it was pretty funny. I thought they did a nice job. Then they go to episode 3, which felt more like episode 1 because his buddy came back, and I don't know. It was, and that one was more about dating. It more felt like an episode of Girls or something.
Is there any?
And the third episode was even better than the second one. So I guess my thumb is actually up for Master.
Is there anything hacker though than ethnic comedian's dad in something?
Not really, but it's okay.
I mean, comics put their dads in, like Mark Maron had Judd Hirsch playing his dad.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's inevitable.
But they were talking about cultural, you know, like how his buddy's Korean and there's like this Korean there, Chinese dad, his Chinese guy, Chinese dad. And they're talking about why, you know, what the immigrants did in at the same age. They flash back to their parents at the same age as they are and how they're, you know, they were hardworking people. And these guys today only worry about, you know, what's on Facebook and stupid shit, you know. It was kind of like
it's
that.
Kind of
it was actually a pretty good episode. I really liked it, and like I said, I thought the third one, which was maybe more of what I thought the show was ultimately going to be, and it sort of lived. He goes out on the date with this girl, and it kind of goes badly. I thought that was more what the show was going for, and I thought it worked. The first one, I know you saw the first one, and you actually kind of liked it, right?
I enjoyed it. I thought, I mean, it was good enough. I'd watch another one.
Well, maybe you won't like
the ensuing ones. in the first one, he ends up like accidentally babysitting his friend's kids.
Yeah,
like she's just like, hey, can you watch them for an hour or two? And the kids end up basically destroying his life by like they go to the grocery store and the little kid puts his dick on all the waffles.
Yeah,
you know, it just like and it just showed the kids were like. Everything the kids did, they either lied or like got him in trouble. Right. And I went, that's pretty accurate. Having spent some time around little kids, like
some of the little kid stuff was cute.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty.
It didn't work for me. You know, I mean, whether it's true or not, doesn't to me make for great comedy. Just because you know, Gilbert Gottfried hates that. By the way, I know my friend. There's a guy I know
what kids
was working. No, he says it's not funny if you say something on stage. And it's true. People applaud and think you're a genius. He says, that's not funny.
Well,
you know what I mean? Guys go on stage and they go, you know, how come your sock is always, you know, where does that one sock go in the dryer? And, you know,
well,
how come you drive on the parkway and park on the driveway? He goes, that kind of comedy he finds not funny.
Well, there's recognition comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gilbert's jokes are not like that.
Yeah, exactly. They're completely not. But Gilbert does not appreciate that. But that's what I'm saying. To me, you need more than. That's just what happens in real life for me to be funny. I'm with Gilbert, but anyway. But I did like the other one.
Okay,
so
the things we hate in comedy are list jokes.
Well, yeah, I talk about
those. Where somebody goes, you know.
Listing jokes, yeah.
They're like.
The side effects of this medicine are diarrhea, constipation, blurred vision, lack of sight. And you do it really. It's any joke where a guy just lists a bunch of stuff
has
in
a
row
things, right?
And people applaud, not because those things are particularly funny, but just because this idiot comedian decided to memorize 200 things. There's a guy who did Halloween candy.
Toast?
No, there's a guy who does Halloween candy. And that was his closer. He's like, I remember being a kid and you'd get Zagnut bars and Bit of Honeys and Milky Ways. And he goes on, and it goes on for about 10 minutes. He lists different types of candy. And the audience is roaring, waves of laughter. And it's like...
Malamars.
Yeah, but it just goes on and on. Yeah. And it's just like...
Maltesers.
That's not funny to me.
M&M's. You know, just, well, what they'll do is they'll do a list real fast.
Yeah, well, they tell me they do them real fast. Yeah,
they'll
sure.
Be like,
yeah.
You know, be like... Milky Way, Henry, you know, like they just speed Butterfinger. They'll just blow through a big list.
Or they incorporate a bunch of names of different things into a joke.
An auction.
Yeah. Auctioneer. There was one about, you know, like a guy, there's a guy who does a bit about, he puts different types of names of board games and he incorporates them all into this long story about I forget what the story's about. But
oh, they play like Mad Libs?
And then we said, sorry. Oh, no, it's not sorry. I'm sorry if that joke seemed a little Parcheesy, but, you know, and it just goes on, and Corey's eyes are rolled into the back of his head. Hates that joke.
I would sack
He
punch.
Hates that joke? Well, that guy, there's a local
Why don't
guy
you write
doing
down,
that.
Write down the name of that fellow. I don't know if I know that bit.
Yeah? Oh. Oh. Well, we'll just do it after the show. What will happen if I write the guy's name
our
down?
Our good friends.
Our
good friends. One exception to this bit, which I've heard it 10,000 times, so I'm over it. But
no, because you're going to go crazy about this guy when I write it down, I don't want you to do anything.
I'm not going
to
go crazy.
No, you are.
Write down the name.
You are.
I'm not going to say anything. Our dear friend Sal D'Amelio had a bit that I enjoyed the first time.
Okay, yeah,
he did
I know the joke, Sal.
He's got a bit where he like. Says hockey players' names sound like wines.
Yeah, he goes to 7-Eleven. Like, there's an international wine rack.
And you know, it's like, you know.
By the way, that's the guy doing the board game bit.
Okay.
Which, right. again, I can edit this out if you want to.
No.
All right,
I will,
go ahead.
I will after the show.
Sal D'Amelio's bit. Let's talk
I'm
about
I'm just
that.
Saying, though, but that's a listing bit, kind of. But
it is, but it's not.
But it's got a premise to it.
It has a cool premise.
He's like,
it's
you
not,
know, Cabernet Sauvignon takes the shot at the point.
It has elements of a listing joke, but it's also, it has a concept. The concept is more than just shoehorning all these names into something.
Sal makes it work.
Right. The names of the wines aren't funny, but in the context of a hockey game, it could be. So I think Sal's joke is a little different.
Sal does the voice of the hockey guy and makes it sound good.
In a comedy class setting, if somebody does a listing joke, I will call them out. I will let them know about it. I won't ban them and tell them, oh, you can't do this. And boy, that bit might get a big laugh. It might get a big reaction. The problem is the guy at the back of the room that's booking the club or the guy at the back of the room who's the veteran comic who's been around
and
knows what's good and what's shitty knows that that's a weak joke. They know that that's not a great joke.
Now,
and again, if all
granted, Gilbert's jokes are like James Mason.
Right.
Like he does fucking James Mason impressions and shit.
But Gilbert's comedy, though, becomes bigger than the sum of its parts in a way. Gilbert's comedy is that it's the root.
He also does joke book dirty
he
jokes.
He does do joke book dirty jokes. But the difference, I think, between Gilbert and other people is that the routine itself is funny. It's not that the individual jokes are brilliant on their own or something, mm-hmm. but it's just the way that he tells them and the way that he'll go from joke to joke. Whereas where Gilbert, like if Gilbert offends people,
he doubles down.
He does another offensive joke, right? Normally, if you do a joke where people groan at it or something, then you then go to something where this will get them back. Whereas Gilbert will just go deeper and go.
I have a bit built in. I have a line that gets a groan every time.
Okay.
And then I go, oh, that's what you're going to turn on me about.
Yeah.
And like make that a bit that they're.
Well, in comedy class, I would say you have a groaner followed by a saver.
Right.
Which you don't need either of. But that's okay.
No, I like the groaner. I actually like the line,
right.
But it gets a groan.
Right, yeah.
And then I use that to seg.
I
use that to seg into something else.
If you're doing the groaner knowing that it's going to get a groan and that the groaner sets up something else, I guess that's okay.
That's what I'm
saying. But you can't expect people, if you expect people to laugh and they groan, that's not the reaction you're going for. It's not a good joke. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm saying I use that. I personally like the line.
Yours might be the exception, but that's okay. And the other thing about comedy rules that I say when I say comedy rules, there's always exceptions to them.
Right. But what I'm saying, I use the groan to dovetail into something else.
Sure. Okay.
Anyway.
All right. So Master of None, I guess I'm recommending it. I've only watched 3 of the 10 episodes or whatever that are up there, so 12 episodes.
I got to say, I am not a huge fan of Aziz's stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him on Parks and Rec. I thought he was great.
And it's the Parks and Rec guys that are doing this, too. A lot
of the
behind-the-scenes guys are the Parks and Rec.
In the pilot, he had, like, Eric Heidecker or Tim, which...
I don't
know. One of those
know.
Guys. There's Tim and Eric.
Tim and Eric.
I think it was Tim. I don't know. It was one of the guys.
Well, I was going to say it's the guy that's not funny, but that doesn't narrow it down.
Okay.
Those guys.
I hate nothing more than Tim and Eric.
By the way, that movie...
Is the worst.
That fucking... If you've ever tried... I was watching that. My ex-girlfriend Heather had that on Netflix, and I walked out of the room.
It's fucking
I go,
brutal.
Look, she goes, do you want to watch this movie? And I said, you want to watch it? I said, look, I got to go. I fucking left the room.
It's really bad.
I left the apartment. It was so bad. But yeah, those guys are not funny. And he wasn't good in the first episode. The third episode, he comes back, and it's like I said, the third one feels like more what I thought the show was going to be and more of what it is. Is it as good as Togetherness or something, which is, I think, an amazing show? No, it's not even in that league.
You know, what I'd like to see in a television show, and they'll never really do it, is, well, okay, if there was a television show based on either of our lives.
Yes.
Either of us would be a character in it.
Yeah.
But on a sitcom, it would be like, I'm the one friend you have.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that might be true in your case. But what I'm saying is...
All right. Well, it's good to have you back for your final appearance on Joel Radio.
Do you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying, though? Like, on a sitcom, it's like the guy has three friends.
Right.
It's more like you have 12 friends, and sometimes you hang out...
Well, sitcom, everybody is sort of... it's the personification of all your friends.
Like,
it's rolled up into one guy.
So if we did there was a series and there were 13 episodes,
yeah,
John Tenney might be in three of the episodes.
Well,
Aziz
has,
you might be in four or five,
Aziz,
but you're not going to be in every fucking
Aziz
show.
Aziz has the Chinese friend, and then he's got the black lesbian friend. You know, so he's got a couple of friends.
What I'm saying is everybody...
But they're all diverse, but you don't have two white friends.
Right.
You never have two white friends or two black friends. You have one of this and one of that and one of that.
And you don't hang out with...
Two Jews.
Right.
You never have two Jews. You have one Jew. You can't have two Jews.
I have many Jews.
But you can in a sitcom.
I know.
Okay,
I,
all your Jews are going to have to be rolled up into one Jew.
I would have
Jew.
A composite Jew.
You have to composite Jew.
They would have to go, look.
You got
to
figure out.
We'll give you the one lawyer.
Right.
You get one Jew.
You get one Jew.
And I'm like, but I got four
or
five
Dave,
Jews.
It was David Krumholtz. And
and then like they'll be like, look, you can have Dave Landau, but you can't have Russ Brown.
I know.
Like,
you get one guy.
You like one comic.
You get one guy.
You know what I mean?
You can't have Joel and Sal. It's two Dagos.
Exactly, right.
Sal's more of the Dago than I am. So Sal could still be
They'll be like, Bill Bichart.
I would be.
And Bill Hildebrandt. That's two
Bills.
Would I
be turned into a Jew then for the purposes of the
you'd be a Dago.
Why would I? But Sal's the Dago. Or is Sal not? Sal's not?
Well.
But Sal's more the Dago than I am. You would have to take parts of Sal and put that onto me, maybe?
Your first name's Joel, so you would probably be more Jew.
I'd be the Jew,
First of all, Sal is more Dago-y than like... than like
Parmesan cheese or something.
Yeah. Like, you'd need an organ grinder with a monkey to be more Italian.
But I think you would have to... Yeah, you would have to put some... You'd have to give me a black leather jacket. And a 5 o'clock shadow or something. You'd have to somehow put...
Sal's like the Fonz.
Sal on top
like,
of
Sal's me. Sal's like the Fonz in the mob eating a bowl of spaghetti. He's like the most...
Sal couldn't be more Italian if he was tossing a pizza dough in the air. You couldn't be more Italian. He's so Italian. But no, you would... You know what you're saying
with
is that...
With a big Jerry Colonna mustache. Sal would have to be Sal would have to be tossing a pizza while he jumps into the Mushroom Kingdom to be more Italian.
While he's shaving an Italian ice on the street corner.
He's jumping over Bowser.
But you would have to, your friends.
While he bribes a cop. All right, sorry.
While he takes bets on the eighth race. Now, but listen, you.
Okay.
So you would, but your Jew.
No, you're right, but that's what TV does.
But Nigel Rosenblum would be your Jew friend and not me?
Or it'd have to be a composite of the Jews.
I would have to be your lawyer friend or your comedian.
You'd have to be, there'd be one comic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You'd have a comic and a lawyer, and then you'd have some,
Now, what I'm saying is there's practical reasons to do that on a sitcom.
Yeah.
Because you have a cast and whatever. But if you're doing a show like Louis's kind of good like that, actually, in that... Louis' friends just rotate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
it's like Sanford and Son kind of had that. There would be different old guys that Fred could hang out with.
Well, he had a small roster.
Yeah, but it was a small, but you never knew.
I think by they got to like season three, it was always Grady.
It was always Grady.
But it started like Bubba was there.
Yeah, it could be Bubba or Grady.
Yeah.
Beaver could have different friends.
Beaver.
Sometimes you would see Larry Mondello or Whitey.
That's the best example.
Beaver, yeah.
That's an excellent example because there was... He had Gilbert, and he had Larry Mondello, and Whitey.
But some of those did come and go, though. Not everyone was on every season of that. But
Eddie Haskell was always Wally's friend.
Eddie Haskell and Lumpy were always evergreen.
Wally only had
for
two
Wally,
friends.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But those kids, Whitey was an asshole.
Well, but okay, so this Aziz Ansari show and Marin and all these shows are attempting to be Louis.
Right, yeah.
They're all copying, which Louis is basically copying Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, okay.
They're in all a more...
I didn't get the feel that this was... I don't know Louis that well, but I didn't get the feel that this was a ripoff of Louis. I felt like this was more of Girls.
It's a...
In a sense,
it is, it is. But it's a single camera show about a comedian.
But Girls tries to be real in a way that some of those urban sitcoms don't. Like Broad City... No pun intended, is the broader version of Girls in a sense. Broad City never isn't supposed to be real. Broad City is not that slice of life that Girls are supposed to be.
Broad City,
and I feel like
they're over the top in their
silliness. Yeah, they're over the top in their comedy.
Their silliness.
Right.
Which I like Broad
Or something
City.
Like, you know, Bored to Death was complete fiction. But it, yeah. again, it takes place in the same neighborhood as Girls. And
Broad City is their silly. They act silly in a somewhat realistic world.
Right, yeah. Right, Flight of the Conchords.
Right, right, right.
Real, you know, Flight of the Conchords, real world.
Well, Flight of the Conchords had musical numbers,
sure.
So it was totally
Flights of Fancy,
you know. But
all right,
anyway,
well,
I'll watch another.
Go watch
show.
A few and let us know because I thought it was okay.
I was criticized.
I've heard people saying good things about it.
No,
and I said, boy, that first one, man, I almost didn't want to keep going. But my rule with any of these is I always go for two.
Yes.
When they're streaming and I can get them right away, I always go for two because I know that they retool stuff after the pilot all the time.
One of our one of our loyal listeners said that I would not like it because it was millennial content, the Aziz show, which I don't necessarily hate anything involving millennials.
No.
I hate most of it, but not all
well,
of it.
Well, right. It's... But to me, millennial stuff is really like... to me, millennial stuff that I don't get is like the talking French fries and that. Well, what is that fucking thing?
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, but
that stuff I don't get. That stuff.
Although
I
that's
really,
actually older than millennials.
It is, I know, but some
Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah, but sometimes that style of comedy, that's what I don't get at all. You know, yeah. That's sometimes where I kind of draw the line and go, yeah, that's not for me. But don't you think that even it's old too? Even Family Guy and American Dad are more like that too.
Well,
in a sense,
those shows though are like. You know, some comedy has a shelf life, okay?
Yeah.
Some comedy has a date where you are too old for it.
Yeah.
And I think that I actually thought Aqua Teen Hunger Force and C-Lab, I would watch those when they came on.
Yeah.
Which was about 2000.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? All right. So 15 years ago, I thought those were funny.
Yeah.
Then I just, I'm now at a point where I'm past, you know, it just...
Okay, maybe that, but you know again, what I mean? But again, those weren't my generation anyway, really. You know,
well, they're not millennial either. I don't know
what
they are. They're really like
they're,
late,
they're not
late Gen X.
Gen Y or something, right?
Gen Y, that's it. That's
all right, well, let's move on. Anything else on TV streaming? We're running late. I got to get to Tiny Tim.
The new Mr. Shows are out.
Okay.
With
just,
Bob and David.
It's just called With Bob and David.
Yeah, but it's...
So somebody owns that name, that HBO or something.
No, they just decided not to call it Mr.
Show.
Oh,
okay. All right.
Well, or maybe HBO was it. You know what it is? Exactly, Mr. Show.
Okay.
It's all the guys. It's like, you know, Paul F. Tompkins and Brian Posehn and all those guys and Doug Kenny. Tom Kenny. All the guys that were on the show before are there.
Okay.
It was pretty good. The first one I watched was Guy.
Well, there's a demand. You know, that those guys went from that show and they all had success.
Yeah.
And so now you're getting the band back together. Although sometimes I look and it's funny. I was going through my Netflix last night and I was like, oh, remember when I was going to watch the new Wet Hot American Summer?
Mm-hmm.
And me and the rest of America decided fuck all that. You know, I mean, there's things like that.
That was
that
hot for a while.
They come back, but just, you know, sometimes this nostalgia burns bright and goes away.
I liked Wet Hot.
And I thought.
I liked Wet Hot American Summer, the movie, the first time.
And what did you think of the series?
And the series, to me, was kind of a little redundant by the third one
I saw. But people went crazy for, what was the other one that they brought back? What was the other thing? What was the series they brought back on Netflix? With Michael Cera and everybody. I know I'm selling an
Arrested
idiot.
Development.
Arrested Development, everyone went bananas for, and then they saw it, and people went, eh.
There were, like, two really funny episodes of the revived.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. People.
So,
but I feel like sometimes these shows, that's what happens with these.
Well, everything's coming back.
Well, Community.
Okay, one of my all-time favorite shows, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
That's coming back.
Just put a Kickstarter up.
They're gonna
and
go.
He's collected $2 million, by the way, already.
All right.
In like a week and a half.
Yes.
So that goes back to my theory about Empire and black people.
Yeah.
If you take, you only need to have a certain number of, like, I think there was like 16,000 donors on that Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Now collecting the money from everybody is another thing. But
sure, yeah. They might not get that money, but ultimately.
But they had 16,000 people fund them to $2 million.
Okay, well, good for them.
That's a small, small number of people.
And $2 million, by the way. Maybe you can make Mystery Science Theater for $2 million. Right. You probably can't make almost anything else for $2
million. Right.
You know, it's hard to make anything.
Well, with those guys, they're like, we just need to build sets.
Yeah.
And then
get the rights to some movie or whatever.
It's not like,
yeah,
you know, they're like, the show looks cheap intentionally.
Yeah.
So anyway, that Kickstarter funded that like immediately. That funded it for like 3 or 4 episodes. Yeah. They're going to like tear up. But what I'm saying is you only need a small number of people.
That's true.
In this new on-demand environment.
Yeah, but my feeling is I feel like those things are a disappointment more often than not. And to me, I feel like when you say, I'm going to give you more of this or more of that, I almost wish you don't, in a way. You know what I mean? I don't feel like...
Well, Arrested Development, they didn't need to give us any more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was good the way it was.
Right.
And, you know, I love MST3K, and they did 200 episodes.
Yeah.
There's ones I've never seen.
There's you don't need any
more. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm as big a fan of that show
but
as ever,
I'm trying,
there's ones I've never
okay,
seen.
Okay, let me think here, and this is off the top of my head, because I'm impressed. Where did they ever bring anything back? And I mean bringing it back, meaning it was actually gone, and they brought it back, and it was every bit as good as it used to be. I'm trying to think of something
Family
that
Guy.
I loved. Well, I don't love Family Guy, so that doesn't apply to me. I never liked it when it was original. I never liked it when it came back. So I'm trying to think of anything where they something went away and it came back, and I liked it just as much, and I don't think
the,
I can think
Pixies.
Of it. And music's different. Because music sometimes is just nostalgia. But music sometimes is just, it's the old stuff that they're just redoing, and it's
well, again,
it's good.
But nostalgia
but
is...
the new a new Pixies album, not as good.
Right.
A new My Bloody Valentine album, not as good.
Not,
so those
not
things,
bad. But
okay,
not
but
as
not
good.
As good. Not as good. But I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, Leave It to Beaver reunions and the Brady Bunch and these kind of things. Gilligan's Island came back. They finally got Gilligan off the island.
What
Everyone
about,
had to
what
see
What about
that.
Munster's Revenge?
I don't know
the,
anything
that
about.
That wasn't up to the level.
But it was never a Munster's fan.
Those
but
guys,
I mean,
okay, those guys, everything's got a fan base.
Yeah.
But, like, there's real serious Munsters.
Oh,
fans.
There are, absolutely.
And you watch that show, and you're like,
yeah.
It's cute, because they're all monstery, but, like, come on.
Right. But they're going to bring back Full House.
X-Files?
They're going to bring, and I don't know if X-Files is going to be as good, but we'll see.
Well, the X-Files movie... The second X-Files movie was the biggest piece of shit.
Right.
Now, there was no... Okay, with the X-Files, there's no real reason why they can't bring that back.
Because
it's basically... You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's so...
I mean, you can argue Star Trek.
Yes.
Even though it's different, and the Star Trek movies were as good as the show, if not
better, you would at times. Some people would say Next Generation.
The next... Well, okay, but that's a different
But it's
fiction.
A different show.
But I'm saying the Star Trek movies are bringing back Star Trek guys and having it be as good as the show. Okay. There's one. But again, it's funny, I'm not even a Star Trek fan.
Mm-hmm. It's a
rare... So I don't know. And the J.J. Abrams Star Trek worked for one, didn't work for two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Star Wars didn't work coming back.
Right.
You know, and the track record is not to bring stuff back.
I think with MST, the concept is so basic.
It's so low. Yeah, it's a low concept.
It's a pretty solid footing that they might, those might be good. And but you're right. No,
it's
Monty
hard.
Python keeps doing
stuff.
Yeah,
they keep doing stuff and they're no good.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's hard. It's tough.
It's depressing.
I mean, all maybe, right, but maybe I'm to the point where I'm over that thing. I don't think I need to watch new episodes of The Office, which is a show that I like. I'll just watch those old Offices.
Well,
it's okay.
The Office outstayed its welcome.
Well, Ricky Gervais is making his movie.
It's kind
of... So what do you think of that?
Now, Arrested Development, they only had 3 seasons.
Okay.
So people went, we want more.
And they did 9 seasons of The Office or whatever they
did?
Yeah.
I think when you're at the point where you've done enough of it, like, you know...
There's no need.
If they canceled Saturday Night Live today, in 3 years, people go, wish they'd bring back Saturday Night Live.
Oh, they keep bringing that back. That thing dies and gets revived.
Well, it doesn't quite ever die.
No, but it's you know, they refresh... But when you saw something like SNL 40, I wish we had Will Ferrell and whoever back. And then you got them and you realize, they suck. And you go, okay.
You know who didn't suck? Norm.
Norm? Well, Norm was great.
Norm was fantastic.
Sometimes guys are good.
You know who was good? Dana Carvey. And you know why he was good? Because they showed him for 30 seconds.
All right, you got a movie. I got a movie review. Let me do this, and you can do Steve Jobs, I guess. But this is a documentary. It's on Showtime. I don't know if you can see it anywhere else. I think they funded it partially or bought it. But it's called Listen to Me, Marlon. It is a documentary about the life of Marlon Brando and is completely narrated by secret tapes that Marlon Brando made about his life. For his whole life. A lot of it, some of it was from interviews as well, and there's, of course, a lot of clips from his movies. But really, here's my review of it. If I had to give it a number from 1 to 10, I'd probably give it like an 8 on the Corey and Joel 5-finger scale. Let's give it 4 fingers. Here's the thing about it. Fascinating, really compelling to see him and hear him over the years and how he changed physically, the way his voice changed. His voice got real lispy, and I don't know. It got weird. But here's the thing. Here's the only thing about reviewing this and recommending it. I would say this thing is absolutely no fun at all. Okay. It's compelling as hell. It's interesting as anything I've seen in a documentary in a long time. Mm-hmm. But boy, this is no fun. And part of it is a lot of it has to do with his son, Christian Brando, who was which is a sad story, and there's lots of, you know, Marlon Brando on the witness stand and doing that, and of course his daughter. I don't want to ruin it for anybody that doesn't know Marlon Brando's story, but it also shows, you know, the different movies and the projects he hated and the projects he liked, and you know, his whole career. And boy, it's very candid interviews. There is a segment that's all about the women he fucked, and apparently he fucked everybody.
He did.
And you see him like female reporters are interviewing him, and they're asking him, so Marlon, tell us about your new movie. And he's like, what are you doing at? Maybe we can go out now. You know, and you can see him trying to bed these girls right after, you know, the interview. It's really amazing. I think if you're a film geek, and I know you are, Corey,
yes,
you would really enjoy this. I don't know if you enjoyed it. It's a great documentary. How fun it is, again, I think for some people, they're not going to care, but it's great.
Somebody, The Reckless Life and Remarkable Career of Marlon Brando, by Stephen Caffer.
Yes.
Which was great.
Then you might really like this.
So I've read a Brando biography, and he was a poon hound.
Yeah.
They often claim that he was gay because he was really close with Wally Cox.
Yeah, that never comes up in this.
But they...
although the Brando estate, like,
people
produced
made,
this.
People
so.
Have made gay jokes about you and I.
Yeah. Huh? So,
Just because you have a friend who's a man, and it was he and Wally Cox were kind of a weird pairing.
Yeah, right.
Wally was kind of a wiry little nerdy looking guy, yeah. And he and Brando were like best friends.
There's a photo of him. If you want to go deep into the internet, where you can see Brando giving a blowjob. It's a photo that's blurry, and you don't know if it's really him or not. But
there's also like
there's a penis.
There's
in
a
there's Marlon
a there's
Brando's
allegedly
mouth.
The Barbara Streisand porn, sex tape, yeah, which yeah. I don't believe that either.
I don't know.
You know what, though? As we were saying about Charlie Sheen off the air, look, eventually, you know, you might try a dick.
When you fucked every woman in the world, you might go, which is why I'll never be gay, because there's way too many
women on the list.
Right. If Charlie Sheen fucked 5,000 girls, at the rate I'm going, I'd have to live for 2,000 years.
Hey, now.
Hey-o! Oh. Anyway, but yeah, go see Listen to Me, Marlon. It's on Showtime. I was able to, it just debuted this week. I pulled it up on my on demand and watched it, and it was pretty cool. And they also do this thing where at some point Brando was scanned in facially, like 3D captured, and they animate some of the tapes with this weird grid of Brando talking, you know, CGI Brando. They don't try to make it photorealistic, but it's like kind of this weird, like, Max Headroom Brando. It's very weird. Okay. And he describes it in the tape. He goes, well, they scanned me in. I do a terrible Brando. Yeah. They scanned me in digitally, and then in the future there won't be any actors. You're doing Vito Corleone from The Godfather. Brando has a weird talk.
He did
talk.
Have kind of a weird epic thing.
And he hates, you know, and there's stuff about how he hates Francis Ford Coppola, about Apocalypse Now, about how he Brando claims he rewrote the script for Apocalypse Now at that Brando, and then he never got any credit. And you know,
there's nothing weirder than the interview with him and Larry King where he kisses Larry.
Yeah,
King.
That was very odd. That one's not in there, but there is some interviews with him. There's him on Dick Cavett.
Yeah,
You see Shalil Littlefeather accepting the Oscar
well,
for
Brando
him.
Well, Brando was a weird you guy see, all along, yeah. and he went crazy yeah. in the mid-60s. I mean, yeah. he went went down and made Mutiny on the Bounty and came home with a Tahitian wife. And
right, and then they broke up after like a month, but they had the kid, and it's all in the movie. It's great. And he talks about Tahiti so much in this movie. It's now, he owned that island, right? He bought an island?
Yes.
Or did he just live on Bora Bora? I've heard it both ways. In the documentary, it sounds like he bought in a toll. That's what it seems like from the documentary.
Well, when they say he bought an island, it's like you buy a little tiny...
It's still part of Tahiti, but you bought the property. Like, it's a lot or something. But yeah, it's really cool. I think if you're filming... And one thing also I noticed from watching these, I was like, boy, because they're showing a lot of Last Tango in Paris, you know, the Bertolucci's movie... And boy, movies used to really be art in a way that they're not anymore. And it really makes it sad because you're looking at every frame of Last Tango in Paris is just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And you're going, boy, they don't make that anymore. You know, Wes Anderson, I think, is a guy who sort of is old school like that.
There's
like
a couple
Kubrick
of
guys.
Okay,
and sort of those guys.
Well,
Tarantino would probably
PTA.
A lot of people. Okay, Paul Thomas Anderson, yeah.
PTA and Quentin.
But
have a real visual.
Boy, I tell you,
well,
man.
You want to hear about a movie
when
that...
you see The Godfather and you see Last Tango in Paris and you see even, you know, stuff like Guys and Dolls that's in there and of course, On the Waterfront and The Wild One and all that
absolutely.
Stuff. You see all those clips and you go, boy, movies were art, man. Mm-hmm. They were just different. They're just a different eye. They're just a different... Maybe they took more time with them or maybe
I watched,
there was...
A couple weeks ago, I watched The Hustler.
Yeah.
With Paul Newman.
Sure.
That movie's gorgeous.
Great, yeah.
Speaking of a movie, if you want to do some quick reviews here, I want to talk about a movie with no artistry, an interesting movie, but directed by Jay Roach, who made everything look like he was shooting a Cialis commercial on, like he's like, I got to get out of here. Let's cut and print. I think the guy who directs those Xarelto commercials with, Arnold Palmer and Kevin Nealon hanging out on the golf
course. Well, you know, those guys are sometimes great directors. You know,
right? We're making those commercials. Yeah. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I've seen those. Those are odd. Yeah,
aren't those weird?
Those are weird because they're not funny, but they're supposed to be funny. But they're
like
they're not
making
supposed to
jokes
be.
And like Kevin Nealon misses the putt and then makes the like
it's
face.
Yeah.
And then Arnie is like being held up by animatronics or they're like
because.
Shocking his muscles.
Okay. You have Kevin Nealon who shouldn't be in a drug commercial.
Yeah.
You have Arnold Palmer who shouldn't be in a comedy sketch, and yet it's a comedy sketch and a drug commercial. And then you have the NASCAR guy doing God
right.
knows
I didn't even know who
shouldn't
was.
Be on the golf course, and yet he's on a golf course. It's all three.
They're like guys
elements.
Who shouldn't be hanging out.
Yeah.
And then
it's like talk about throwing a bunch of shit on the wall and seeing what sticks.
And then they're like, you know. These dietary restrictions. Don't get me started on those.
Yeah, this
was a victory for me. Oh, wow. This is the weirdest goddamn commercial.
It's weird that the scripting is weird. Yeah. It looks like stuff was edited. Like it was.
You know, the Geralto had a commercial before about like this is Tony. He's a regular guy.
Yeah.
And the guy they got had this weird, like they put contacts in him or something, so he looked like a vampire.
Right.
It's just the Xarelto ads are fucking weird.
Well, I think sometimes those drug commercials, they have to be direct in a way that if they were being clever and actually having the dialogue flow in a natural way, they would miss the points of the benefits of the drugs.
They have
need
too
to be
many
spelled.
Legal restrictions.
I don't know if it's legal. I think they just want the drug to be spelled out or else it's not effective. Do you ever see the Firehouse Subs commercial? One brother looks like he's been digitally altered.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't know if the guy was in a fire or if they just blurred. And I've seen other ones and the guy didn't look like that. But there's one where it's like they did some sort of digital noise reduction on the one brother. And it's like, was he scarred in a fire? Or like, why is that? It's bizarre.
Oh,
yeah. It doesn't make sense.
It's weird.
It's like putting people on television that shouldn't be on television.
You're right.
Sometimes you gotta make some compromises.
Well, they put me on top.
Well,
they wised up
on that one. Can I get to Tiny Tim? What's the movie review?
The movie I was gonna say is Trumbo.
Oh, okay.
Which is a good movie with a bad director.
That's the Jay Roach movie.
Yeah,
okay.
Jay Roach is a comedy director, and he directed like Austin Powers and Meet the Parents and Meet the Fucking Fockers and Dinner for Schmucks and all that.
Well,
stuff.
Well, he did Game Change,
but then he did Game Change
for
and he
HBO.
Did Recount.
Yeah.
So this, I think he's trying to move more into
he throws up the camera and shoots the actors.
Exactly.
That's all he does.
So,
and
I thought Trumbo needed a little more artistry.
Trumbo looks like a lot of, like, I just saw the trailer on TV the other day. It looks like a lot of bad wigs and mustaches and stuff.
That's
and
what I'm saying.
A lot of, like, prop department
it's a
stuff.
Good, it's a, okay, yeah. So you got Bryan Cranston is the lead.
Yeah.
And Bryan Cranston's awesome.
Right.
And you've got a lot of funny people like, you know, Stephen Root and John Goodman are in it.
And Louis C.K.'s in it.
Louis C.K., who's not funny at all.
Okay,
his character is unfunny. Well. His character is a broke communist screenwriter who, you know, is too committed to the cause. Right. Helen Mirren. And they're all good. And you enjoy watching all these actors chew the scenery.
Yeah.
And then they've got the guy from, what was A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie, playing Edward G. Robinson.
Okay.
And they've got a guy playing Kirk Douglas who looks exactly like fucking Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, all right.
And they've got the guy from JAG playing John Wayne.
Okay.
So it's a fun movie.
It's an interesting subject to me.
It's a good subject, well acted, but Jay Roach's direction is so... I sat there and went, what if Joel Cohen... Like, what if... What if the Coen brothers made this?
Right.
This would probably be fucking...
Or Scorsese or Clint Eastwood or somebody.
Somebody with an eye.
Yeah.
This would be sensational.
Yeah.
Instead, it's kind of... Okay. It's it's pretty good.
Is Bryan Cranston getting nominated based on
He might.
Yeah.
Because it's a kind of a down year.
And maybe the screenwriter, because there's your political statement about Trumbo, right? Wouldn't you nominate?
But this movie's just not... This
it's
movie's
just not
like,
good enough.
This movie's kind of a B.
I'm not sure what's good enough. I think The Martian gets every... I think The Martian leads
the
nomination.
Well, I'll tell you what I just saw.
The Martian will lead the nomination, says Joel Fragamenti right here on JoelRadio.net.
Because it made all the money?
Because they have to acknowledge a movie like that because it made so much fucking goddamn money.
Me. It's not that
And it's got
either.
That giant Hollywood star in it. It's the same way that Gravity got all of its nominations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe there will come along something like a Selma. I don't know what that would be this year. I'm not sure what the big prestige picture is going to be in that way. Eddie Redmayne's playing a woman. I think just give him the fucking award right now. Why not? And I think, isn't there Kate Blanchett plays a lesbian and that one's going to be big?
I can tell you that Carey Mulligan will get nominated for Suffragette.
Okay.
That's pretty much a lock.
All right.
I think.
Okay.
I think maybe Jason Segel will get nominated for End of the Tour where he played David Foster Wallace, but nobody saw that.
Yeah. That movie kind of came and went. So.
Yeah. These movies are all tanking. And a movie that tanked.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Tanked.
Okay. Now, Steve Jobs is written by Aaron Sorkin. It was going to be directed by David Fincher, the team that made The Social Network.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fincher dropped out, and it was directed by Danny Boyle.
Now,
Danny Boyle's a perfectly good director.
Yeah. You know what? For that type of movie, I think I'm okay with Danny Boyle.
Actually,
Better than Danny Boyle, but in that kind of movie, I think I'm better
Danny
with
Boyle
Danny Boyle
should have directed Trumbo. It would have been a lot better.
That would have been better, too.
But anyway, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to go see it, I think. Because
Danny Boyle makes personal stories, really. You know, that's what he's sort of known for. You know what I mean? It's sort of portraits of individuals. And which I guess, you know, Steve Jobs is that kind of movie. But I think people are sick of that story. I think the mythology of Steve. And I know this movie breaks the mythology of Steve Jobs in a way. But I think we've already established what the Steve Jobs story is. And people don't want it rewritten.
Well,
you know,
this movie does not paint him in a very good light.
No.
He looks like a dick.
Which apparently is, I reviewed the documentary on an episode recently, and yeah, that's kind of what he was. The documentary's great, by the way. Go see that.
He's pretty uncompromising and doesn't...
You need to see the documentary.
I will check it out.
Yeah, it's great.
I think it's an interesting story. I think the whole thing is Steve... The way they did this, they broke it into... We're running long here. Three parts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the launch of the Apple, the launch of the first Macintosh, then he has the next, and then he comes back and launches the iPod.
Yeah.
So it's like a three-act structure. Mm-hmm. It could be a play. It's a really good script. The script by Aaron Sorkin is terrific. It's good Aaron Sorkin. Sometimes there's bad Aaron Sorkin where he's sanctimoniously moralizing too much. This is good Aaron Sorkin, except they have Seth Rogen as Steve Wozniak. And
that's okay. I mean, okay. Casting-wise, it seems okay. Right.
I wish that this movie had been a hit so that they could do a sketch on Saturday Night Live where Bobby Moynihan plays him.
Yeah, right.
Seth Rogen, Steve Wozniak's entire role in the movie. People, it's like there's three different structures.
Yeah.
So people just come up and yell at him before he introduces products. They could have just had Seth Rogen goes, "You need to acknowledge the Apple II team."
Yeah.
That drove me crazy.
Yeah.
Because that's all he says. He comes back three times to go, "What about the Apple II team?"
Yeah.
Anyway, So,
well,
I
know,
see why people didn't go see it.
Wozniak, those guys were hippies.
Yeah.
You know, Steve, you know, Seth Rogen is not a bad Steve Wozniak in that it's a guy who was you know, stoned out of his gourd for a long time.
Anyway, I think it's a good story. Steve Jobs was, you know, a not friendly man who wanted to make computers friendly for people to use and make them personalized and all that shit. And at the same time, had a closed system, whereas computing had been open sourced before.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, well, but it tanked big time.
Steve Jobs is a guy that ultimately, you know, his legacy is that, you know, he made a lot of money. I mean, as much as because my feeling is that the products will not seem as like anything, things will lose that revolutionary feel. You know, the iPhone is going to feel like, oh, that's just an iPhone after a while. And maybe it hasn't hit yet, but in the future, it will just feel like, oh, that's just another one of those. That's another one of those. And ultimately, the legacy of Apple is that they fucking made a shit ton of money.
Right.
And that is, I think, what people are realizing about Jobs is that, you know, he made everybody a lot of money, and so people can't trash him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all of those business decisions that he made that company a shit ton of money. And maybe that was more the motivation.
Well,
in a lot of ways,
he was not a success until
later. Yeah.
The third go round,
right? Apple was an initial success.
Yes.
So you can't say that was a success, but he didn't become filthy fucking rich.
Well,
and it didn't.
Yeah, but
Apple didn't become the dominant brand until the third.
Apple
act,
was successful in selling the 2E.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Steve Wozniak kept wanting him to give credit to, and then when he put out the Mac, people were like, "What the fuck is this thing?"
Right.
So. Anyway,
all right.
He wasn't a hit until the 90s.
Go see Jobs. Steve
but Jobs,
Jobs
is worth, you know, don't go see Jobs. Wait till it's on demand.
It'll probably be sooner than later.
It'll be on Netflix in like 3 months.
All right.
So anyway, there you go.
I was going to play
movie that is good.
Oh.
That will win some, will be nominated for things.
Yeah.
Spotlight.
Okay.
But it's a movie that's going to be painful to people to watch.
What is that about?
It is about the Boston Globe investigative team.
Okay. That looks cool. Yeah.
The, Catholic sex scandal.
Yeah, okay. That looks cool.
It's great. It's it's Tom McCarthy who did The Station Agent and did Win-Win. Is a really good director.
Yeah.
It's terrific.
Yeah, I should see
Mark Ruffalo will get nominated.
Yeah.
Keaton could get a nomination. Yeah. They're terrific, but it's a movie we're going to go, I got to really be in the mood for some homework.
Yeah, you got to.
You know, it's intense.
Yeah, that movie does look good. All right. We were talking. Do you want me to play the? I was getting preparing for the show, and I think I was humming something, and Corey goes, "What is that, Tiny Tim?" And I go,
yeah.
"As a matter of fact, and I didn't even know I was doing it, but I've been listening to this God Bless Tiny Tim album, his debut from 1968."
Now, how did you even come to this? Where you decided?
I think I wanted to hear Tiny Tim. I don't know why. You know, I have Google Play Music, so I have access to almost any music that was ever released professionally, and I think I wanted to hear. I don't know who I was listening to, but it reminded me of the fall. I was listening to somebody's falsetto, and I forget who it was. Mm-hmm. And I go, "Well, Tiny Tim sang in
Anthony
that falsetto."
It
wasn't Anthony and the Johnsons, which is an all-time favorite here on this program, but it wasn't Anthony and the Johnsons. But I was listening to somebody's falsetto, and I went like, "Oh, yeah. I wonder if I should listen to the Tiny Tim." And then as I listened to it, I go, I put on the first track, which was pretty good, and then Tiptoe Through the Tulips comes on. For those of you who don't know, I'll cue it up here. And then I was like, "Oh, that's pretty good. Let me Wikipedia that." And there's a button you can get the album information right on Google Play Music.
Yeah.
And how great is this? This is what he's known for. And of course, you know, Tiny Tim was this eccentric guy who played the ukulele, was constantly marrying women, but I believe was actually a closeted gay man. And
you believe that?
I believe that was the case. He's dead.
Do you
now,
also
sorry.
Believe that the sun,
sun rises in the east?
Sets in the west.
Charlie Sheen got AIDS. I believe all the things. But I looked it up, and it turns out this album was produced by Richard Perry, who went on to produce things like Nilsson Schmilsson and Carly Simon Gerso Vane, and just this incredible string of albums in the 60s and 70s. And you can really hear that. It was very, very influenced, very Beatle-influenced production on this. And because I listened to that, I've got to the for this. But then you listen to the next track, and just listen how good this gets. Now,
hello, my dear friend.
A lot of these songs have these
intros.
Well,
here I am on record at last.
Now,
And it feels
apparently
so
Tim was a student of Tin Pan Alley.
Yes. First album.
Like through like the 1930s.
So Three Penny Opera.
He knew all of these old pop songs from like, you know, 78s and stuff. And so he wanted to cover a lot of these. He does a version of I Got You, Babe, but just listen to the production. I mean, when I said to you, I go, it's like Sgt. Pepper's. You were cracking up, and I go, no, it really is. Listen. How good is this?
The production is good.
If
anyone else was singing this.
Well, that's the thing. This is his falsetto. He was, I think, a natural baritone. And he does...
So why didn't he use the baritone?
He does on the other songs. Okay. Listen to how good this is.
I'm just as free as any daughter. I do what I like, just what I like, and how I love it.
I can't take it.
You're going to be listening to this all day. By the way, I looked this up, and this thing's been reissued 5 times. It's got 8 out of 10 on AllMusic. It's considered, like, you know, for real, like, record fans and recording fans. It's considered a breakthrough monument record. And I'm sorry, I didn't believe that either until I started listening to it.
No.
But it is.
There's people who defend the Yoko albums, too.
No, listen.
Look.
Okay, when I talked about he has a baritone, there are songs, he does a couple of them here, where he does a duet with himself. So what you're going to hear...
Oh!
...is Tiny...
Isn't this a lovely band?
Tiny
and
Tim singing with himself.
Play for me.
This is on the old
and
front
now,
porch.
A little duet for you.
He's going to do a duet with himself.
There's a fellow following me.
There's falsetto Tiny.
I'm the fellow following you.
And there's baritone Tiny.
I will follow.
So you're getting both times he's singing with himself. Very good.
You could keep selling this. No, I get that the production is good.
It is a little bit of whimsy, and
I would say right now, what I would like to do.
Yes.
His voice is probably shot now. I would like to take these backing tracks and have Mickey Dolenz record them.
Okay. Yeah, and then you would like it.
I would probably be fantastic.
But it's probably all those Wrecking Crew guys that did all those records. It's from 1968.
Hal Blaine.
It's the exact same guys that were playing on all those Lee Ronaldo shit that you love, and it's considered in the family with all the Beach Boys records and all that.
Yeah.
I get it.
It's the voice of Tiny Tim is
I get that
obnoxious.
The voice, the falsetto, and the ukulele are grating at times. There's he does "I Got You, Babe," where he sings both parts. And it's just him and the uke, and it's terrible. Mm-hmm. But boy, he does some other stuff where they really get the production down and the song is good. Because these are, you know, these are Irving Berlin songs, I think some of them. They're classic American songbook things. And they're really good. So I really like this Tiny Tim album.
Well,
so there you go.
I am no stranger to liking weird things.
Yeah, it's a little eccentric, but I like it.
I like Lee Hazelwood.
Yeah, see, there you go.
Which is not actually good.
No, I said Lee Ronaldo. I meant Lee Hazelwood when I said Lee Ronaldo. Right. He's from Sonic Youth, but I meant Lee.
And then, you know, there's Delaney and Bonnie and all that stuff. But that, I can't do it. I can't listen.
Well, listen, I think you can go a little too artsy and too much, but... You know, when you have.
Used to be the first
and again.
All
right, this is a little better.
Well, he's not doing the falsetto. The falsetto you don't like.
The falsetto is hideous.
But I mean, this could be the Monkees. I mean, this is, you know.
I get it. I get it. And I agree with you. The production is good. I just. I want to fucking die.
Mr. James, where was he, the man that we had?
This is much better.
Yeah, see, this is good.
And who are we to think that it was funny?
Yeah, go get God Bless Tiny Tim if you've got Spotify.
But imagine Mickey doing this.
No, absolutely. But this could very well be Mickey. You know what I mean? It's not... But I mean, like it's probably all the same musicians that were on the Monkees record.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a Tiny singing.
Do we talk about that Wrecking Crew documentary?
I think I might have. I don't know if I reviewed it
or
not.
You know what? It's not really a good movie.
No, it's a good
story.
There's
really not much. It's really for completists.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I read the liner notes on a Monkees album or something, I know that's not for interest of anyone else.
Right.
You know, so it's an insider thing.
Well, if you get that, first of all, that movie was something that you can tell by who's in it. A lot of those guys are dead that were interviewed in it.
Right.
Like, it was something that they, made, and then they had to shelve it for the rights and they re-brought it back.
I believe that the son of Tommy Tedesco.
Yeah.
Wait, it's Tony Tedesco.
I think it's Tommy Tedesco,
Tony
the guitar
Tedesco's
player.
Tony Tedesco's the son.
Yeah.
Tommy Tedesco was one of the players.
Yeah.
And, his son made it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bunch of Tommy Tedesco.
And apparently it's his story, because some of the other people have come out and said, we were never called the Wrecking Crew.
Right,
all a bunch of mythology. But yeah, there was a core of musicians. And if you look it up on Wikipedia, they'll tell you it's as many as 100 and something people. Right. It wasn't like the same five guys or something. But lot of them were
the real core
group
was probably 15 or so.
Yeah,
You know what? Actually, if in the movie Love and Mercy, the Beach Boys, the movie.
Yeah, I never saw that, but I should see that.
You'd probably dig it.
Yeah, I probably would like that.
The movie it's about Brian Wilson and it's got Paul Dano playing the young Brian Wilson and then John Cusack playing the older Brian Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
They show a lot of the Wrecking Crew guys.
Yeah.
They show basically the band standing around being bored while those guys record stuff.
Yeah.
And, Mike and Dennis are going,
one thing
what the hell, man?
From the Wrecking Crew documentary, which is on Netflix if you want to see it, and it's worth watching. It's more of a great story than a great movie, but, that the reason they didn't, the Beach Boy guys could play all that stuff, but it was just a matter of time. You know, they would go in a studio and the Wrecking Crew guys would sit down and they'd get it in one take, two takes. And, when those other guys tried playing and when Al Jardine tried doing the guitar parts, took them 20 goddamn tries.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they got it to where, people wouldn't buy the, I think the Eagles was what they said was the jump off point, although it seems like it must have been earlier than that. I think the Beatles were probably.
Well,
they were saying people didn't want to hear the studio musicians. They wanted to hear the real guys play.
Yeah, but those guys were on every hit record in the 60s.
Right, but
I would say
at the end of the movie, their point was, I think it was the Eagles where they went like, okay, no one wants to hear the studio guys. Yeah. They want to hear the real guys.
I think
now.
By the early 70s that pretty much
it was over
out.
Anyway. Yeah. And you would think Dylan, Dylan's the one who got rid of the Tin Pan Alley songwriters, and then it was whoever that got rid of the, and the movie doesn't, and maybe that's one of the weaknesses of the movie, but that's interesting. But yeah, that's all on that Tiny Tim album. Good. God bless Tiny Tim. And by the way, if I can complain, if I'm going to be a nerd about something else.
Oh, God, no.
No, if I complain.
That never happened.
This sounds like a vinyl rip to me. And I don't know why a vinyl rip would be on Google Play Music. It's been reissued on CD.
So you're saying.
So I might, if I like
vinyl
this,
rip has pops in it and you don't.
Yeah,
like
and
it.
I'm like between tracks.
It
you
ruins
can hear,
the audio
well, no,
clarity.
But my point is like.
Of.
Oh, well, it's clearly not. It's clearly not made from a CD. So when you listen to these music services. A lot of them are just, somebody takes a CD and they rip it. But I'm wondering what the source is for this.
Blame Steve Jobs.
Well, blame whoever.
Because Steve Jobs, as he says to his daughter, Lisa, in the movie, she's got a Walkman on. He goes, I'm going to put 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Yeah.
What are we, a savage?
Well, I just don't know why there's a weird vinyl rip. Which, you can get vinyl rips on the internet. And there are guys who for many, many years, and still do, will only listen to the Beatles on a vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And so when guys want to listen to it on their iPod or whatever, they go on the internet and they get these recordings of the vinyl albums and they listen to them. And there was a period for me, I'll fess, I'm raising my hand here, where I only listened to a Japanese vinyl pressing of Abbey Road. When I wanted to listen to Abbey Road, I got to a point for about 6 months where I would only listen to the Japanese vinyl download version that I was illegal of Abbey Road until they reissued the Beatles CDs in 2009. And then I started listening to those. And now the Beatles have been remixed on the new one collection, which is just, all right, I'm going to wrap up the show. Good night, everybody.
No, but you know what? It's
Thank
true.
You.
Okay. It's true though.
Yeah. We don't need to go. It's a can of worms. We're opening Pandora's box.
We could do a whole show
We're
on
opening
that topic.
Pandora's box.
But I agree. Look, I never read digital comic books.
Yeah.
Cause if I want to read a comic book, I want to read something that's in my hand.
Yeah.
So I hear that. I understand that. I don't think any vinyl, CD, MP3, live concert performance is ever going to make me want to listen to Tiny Tim's voice.
Well, I just it's very odd that it sounds like a vinyl rip on. And I've heard I've listened to 70s pop hit collection, those junky collections, and there are a lot of those are on these services where it's clearly somebody took a 45 and dropped it on and recorded it. And I would expect that. But with the Tiny Tim album, which was kind of a big record at the time. Why is there not? And I know I've looked up on Amazon that there's been CD reissues. By the way, there's versions of that that go for hundreds of dollars on Amazon.com because they're out of print.
Did we not adequately explain the whole Tiny Tim thing to people? I mean, like,
let him do some research.
I'm wondering if people know what the whole deal with him is.
Let him do some research. Let's get out of here. It's Joel Radio. Thanks to Corey for coming back. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But it was great to have Corey back. Go see him with Dave Attell this weekend at Comedy Castle.
All right, kids.
And go listen to me with Tiny Tim.
God, if he wasn't dead, Tiny Tim would be an asshole of the year contender.
I'm going to put on my Beatles Blu-rays. With my LED light kit accentuating the music, which we won't get into on this show.
Joel's a, you know, he owns it. I'll give you that.
I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. Good night, everybody.
I'm going to go home and watch a Gamera movie.
It's Joel Radio.
All right.
See ya.